How's everyone today? Yeah, good. That's good. I'm pretty sour today, so I don't know how this is going to go today. I woke up this morning shaking sort of like that because I was feeling a lot of spirit attacks this morning. They're affecting my throat, and it's because of my unworthiness that they're connecting into that. But anyway, we'll deal with that during the day and see how it goes. The reason why it's like that is because a lot of the spirits who are on the planet are very resistive to the information that I want to discuss with you today. And because of that, they're quite often quite hard with me, trying to shut me down. Just adjust this a little. So they're trying to shut me down from talking about just real spirit interactions. They want a lot of the beliefs about spirit interaction to remain as they are, because they get a lot of enjoyment out of that and they get a lot of effective use of that. And so what they do is they try to project at me to not do these kind of talks about spirits. So one of the weekends they tried to prevent me doing it altogether, but that didn't work. And I have things often during these discussions where you'll hear sound system blur and whatever else happen where they're trying to interfere at different times. And hopefully what will happen over the course of the afternoon is they'll start to see that actually I feel as much love for them as I do for you, and that we want to try and help each other progress out of the state where we are in on the earth and into a different state. And I'd love to find out what that slight little buzz is going on this sound stuff.
We'll just... hopefully it's
me. That way it's easy to sort out. Alright, now how many of you have actually watched at least an introductory DVD that we've done? Yeah? Majority, that's great. Alright, so that gives you an idea at least about the universe and how it works, and all of the different details about the spirit world, because we'll be referring to a lot of that today. How many of you have watched a little bit about the soul? Remember I talked about an introduction to the soul in one of the presentations? So quite a number, that's good, because we'll be referring to how the soul works today quite a lot as well. And how many of you have actually listened to some of the discussions about interaction with spirits, like particularly the laws of rapport and communication discussion? Many of you got that one? Only fewer of that. Okay. That's no worries. Well, that gives me something to work with in terms of what we're going to present today. Now, the outline today is downloadable on the internet, so you can actually download it as a PDF. I'll just write down the website. It's www.divinetruth.com. And if you go to the downloads section and you look up 2009, you'll find a download of today's session. However, you'll only find it in a few days' time because I haven't uploaded it yet. So I hope by the time we get back home, which will be, I think it's Wednesday we're going to be back home, isn't it? So by about Thursday, it'll be uploaded on the net for you to download the outline of today's and tomorrow's discussion. So today's discussion is specifically about the law of attraction and how it influences you with regard to your relationship with spirits. Tomorrow's discussion is specifically about how that law of attraction affects you with regard to your physical illnesses and your physical well-being, and generally the physical well-being of people on earth with regard to the spirit influence that occurs. So that's the discussions over the 2 days. And will most of you be coming along tomorrow as well? Yes, for the majority? So that's good. So I'll see you then, and we'll have a discussion about those things tomorrow, how physically and emotionally you are affected by spirit interactions or spirit attractions. In other words, people who live in the spirit world who are attracted to you for some reason. Today we're going to focus on how it all works, the nuts and bolts of how spirit attraction all works and what's going on behind the scenes. Does that make sense? So that's the focus today that we want to focus on. how everything works behind the scenes. Now, today's discussion is going to be recorded as well. And what we'll do is that will be uploaded on the internet too, so whatever you miss in the discussion, hopefully you will go back to it and be able to download that as an MP3 on the internet. All right. What kind of questions do we want to answer today? Well, firstly, I'd like to talk about what happens when you die. I'd like to remind you about a few things about your own soul. And then what we want to talk about is spirit attractions and how they work. What kind of spirit attractions, what they are, and how it all works in terms of what God has designed. And in fact, why God even designed it in the first place. Because for many people, it seems like it creates huge amounts of problems, right? So what we want to do is discuss those particular matters. Now, in this interaction, some of you are mediums, is that the case? Any of you mediums who channel spirits at all? No? Just a couple? What about people, is there any of you who are healers, who do some healing work with people? Right, so a few more, excellent. And have any of you had spirit discussions with that you know was a conversation with a spirit and you hasn't happened very often that you've had it? How many are in that? Okay, quite a number. So that's good. So what we want to do today is focus on how it all works, the nuts and bolts of spirit interaction. All right? Now, you remember that you are a soul. So you're a soul. We're going to struggle with different things here, obviously. So what's your soul? Can you remember, for those of you who've watched those videos before? Just yell it out, yeah. Passions. Desires. Emotions. Aspirations. Aspirations are things that you sort of hope for in the future that are a part of your soul, right? Anything else? Well, that's an emotion. So, intentions. So they are the things that you intend to do in the future. And by the way, these intentions and aspirations and emotions and desires and passions can be influenced by two primary influences. So what are the primary influences? We've got error-based influences and then truth-based influences, right? And you could say error is anything that's disharmonious with love. So that's always disharmony. Disharmony. I'm going to run out of space, as I often do. With love. And obviously the truth side of things is harmony with love. Now, when we're talking about love here and truth, we're talking about God's truth. So God being an entity that exists, that created you, the source of all creation, and God created all truth, and therefore God created all things harmonious with love. The trouble is that mankind, most of the time even including ourselves, we've created a lot of things disharmonious with love in our lives and subsequent generations and so forth. So in the end, we end up with lots of error in the soul as emotions, as passions, as desires and longings. And that error in the soul creates what we would call, if I give it a term, soul condition. And that's a very important term to remember, because it's your soul condition that determines what happens with all of your law of attraction. Now, if we define the law of attraction as everything that happens to you, no matter what it is attracted to you through your soul condition. Right? Now, this includes what you would classify as positive, you know, encouraging, joyful, happy events. And it also includes all of those things that we often think of as sad, depressing, unwelcome events. And they're all attracted to us because of our soul condition. And by the way, if we're a child, it's not because necessarily of our soul condition, it's because of the combined soul condition of our parents and their environment that creates it. But as we grow up, obviously we become more and more inclined to follow our own desires and our own passions and our own wants and our own loves and everything. And because of that, our own soul condition becomes the foremost creator of our life. So that's soul condition. Soul condition is the complete determining factor with regard to what happens to the law of attraction. In other words, every single event that happens to me, and every single person that's attracted to me, and every single inanimate object, animal, bird, creature, whatever we could think of that's attracted to me, that does whatever to me, they are all attracted to me because of my soul condition. So if I'm sitting out on the patio one evening, nice balmy evening, you know, nice and quiet, not much wind coming, and all of a sudden some mozzies come along and decide they want a piece of my blood, that's the law of attraction event. Created by my soul condition. And because it's something that causes me pain, it's got to be related to something that's unloving in my soul condition. Does that make sense? And so what we would do is we would use that event to allow ourselves to feel what the emotion's all about. So when we start getting eaten alive by mosquitoes, as the saying goes, how do we feel? You know, we feel like pressed a lot of times. We feel like we're being pushed around by this tiny little creature, right? We have to move inside. We have to get away. We start slapping on the chemicals to try and prevent it. But all of these things are a part of what's going on inside of our soul. Because when you're in a state of loving yourself completely, you will find, and loving others completely, you will find that a mozzie won't attack you like that. So yesterday, it was about in the afternoon, we were sitting around, and I had this march fly come up. There were three of us there, and a march fly came up, and interestingly, I was born in March, which is part of the issue, in fact. But this march fly came up and bit me. Of all the three people there, I was the one that got bitten on the foot. So that was a law of attraction event for me. Right? And at the moment, I'm working through a lot of sort of self-dislike or self-hatred type emotions. And because I'm working through those emotions, a lot of the insects around me decide that they can hate me as well, right? And so that's what happens. I just attract that. Now, when I'm not in that mode, and there's been times in the past where I haven't been working through those emotions because they weren't surfacing yet, I would sit down with a group of people and the mozzies would go and eat everyone else but me. So it all depends on what particular things you're going through at that particular moment in time that creates your soul condition. So you can think of yourself, your soul condition, as an ever-changing place or state inside of yourself. So I might be driving along in a car and I have a thought about somebody or something and all of a sudden somebody cuts me off with the car. Just at that same moment that I was having that thought. That thought was a part of the creation of a deeper issue within my soul, and that particular emotion passing through me at that moment created that particular event. And sometimes we'll have events, we'll go for weeks without a certain event happening, and then because we're feeling about that particular thing or thinking about that particular thing a lot, which opens up a lot of our soul feelings, all of a sudden those events get attracted one after the other to us for a short period of time. And then we work our way through some of those emotions and all of a sudden for another few months nothing happens along those same lines anymore. So our soul condition is an ever-changing state based on what emotions are passing through me and being released at any one time. So that's the thing we need to bear in mind about soul condition. So is there any questions about the soul condition that you'd like to ask? Yep, if we can have a microphone just over there, I think. Just right down the front, if you keep your hand up, that way Denise can tell where you are.
What about when, like, a bird commits suicide as you're driving along?
They're driving along and a bird just hits your windscreen and instead. Yep, that is a law of attraction event based on your soul condition. So what feeling, the key is to always go into what feeling it triggers within yourself. So for some people driving along, they hit a bird, they'd go hooray, wouldn't they? Like for some people, they'd be happy about that. And other people driving along would hit a bird and they'd be very sad. And what you've got to do is allow yourself to start connecting to the particular emotion and then asking yourself about what's loving or unloving about this particular emotion. Because it's always something inside of yourself that creates these events. Yeah. No matter what, even a chip in your windscreen, by the way, would be the same thing. Right? And this is something that we need to bear in mind, is every single moment of our life we are creating. And we are creating based on our soul condition, not based on our intellect. So if we look at our intellect and our actions, you could basically say that there's our soul, and our soul condition is creating what we think about, what we're feeling about, and how we act. So every single one of these actions that we have, anything that happens to me, anything that I do to others, anything I feel and think about, are all part about what's actually going on in my soul at any one point in time. Now, this is the case whether I'm on earth or I've passed over onto the spirit world. It's exactly the same. See, what we've got to do is get away from this thought that if a person's dead, they're different. Right? The truth is, there is only a few things that change when you die. And one of them is that you can no longer use your physical body. Right? There's often very little else that actually changes when you die. And we'll talk about that in a minute. What does change and what doesn't change. But if I can always go back to the point that my soul is an unchanging in the sense that when I die, my soul doesn't die. That continues to exist. And in fact, the spirit body that I have attached to my soul also continues to exist. And in fact, the spirit body, when I'm in the spirit form, I can touch, I can taste, I can see, I can smell, I can do all of these things. And in fact, I can do them even better than what I could do them when I was on earth, in most cases, because the bodies are very much more sensitive as they progress. So even my soul is connected to, remember, two bodies. What are those bodies? There's a spirit body and a physical body, or material body, let's call it, shall we? And there's a point of separation between those two, isn't there, which we would call a cord. And the spirits call it a silver cord. Sometimes you could think of it as an energy connector point. For those of you who have ever done electronics or computing, you know that you have sort of like a bus and you plug in a cable and that connects everything up. And you could think of it like this is a connector between the two bodies, the physical body and the spirit body. So this connector allows the soul to experience anything in either the spirit world or the material world. So you're sitting here right now and you've got your soul here present because you're listening and your soul is actually present emotionally in the interaction. Although for some of you, you might be off thinking about, yeah, it was lovely this morning, waking up with my girl, you know, and others might be there thinking about, yeah, boy, you know, you'd be pondering about your family matters or whatever. Well, then you're not present at the soul level. You're just present here with your body. Does that make sense? Because at the soul level, your soul goes wherever you desire to go. And that takes your thoughts and your feelings and your actions with you a lot of the time. But anyway, let's say we are here present and we are listening, right? Then our soul is present with our spirit body and our material body. So right now, if I was a spirit, I'd look at the audience and I'd see your spirit bodies, mostly. And I'd be able to see the condition of all of your spirit bodies. Some of those might be brighter than others. Some might be a bit darker. Some of you might be just going through a bad emotion today, right? You might be feeling like really sad today. So I've noticed a certain colour in that body if I was a spirit. Some of you might be in a real happy place today, so you'd notice a different colour inside that spirit. But tomorrow it might change. Your body changes as per your emotions, you see. So that's your spirit body. And if I was a spirit, I could just look at that body and say, yeah, I know what's going on there. And if I know that emotion and the colour associated with that emotion in the body, then I can tell what pretty much anybody's feeling if I'm a spirit. So I could look at the audience and say, yeah, you're feeling this, you're feeling that, you're feeling this, you're feeling that, and so forth, just by looking at what you would call the aura, but what they see as your actual body and the colours that it emanates. In the material body, the spirits are not who look at you now don't see your material body as clearly as they see your spirit body, unless they are closer to your condition. So in other words, if a spirit's in a really high condition of love, they're seeing mostly your spirit body, and they just see your material body like a real dark sort of a ghostly form is how they see your material body. But if you're looking at them, you see their spirit body like that. Does that make sense? And it's because oftentimes we haven't developed our senses of our different bodies enough to see things as they really are. Or the higher we get in terms of our condition of love, or what you hear a lot of the New Age people say, you know, like vibrational condition, you hear that a lot, right? What that means is the energy is vibrating at a higher frequency, and because of that, it means that certain matter looks dense to you and other matter looks like it's very opaque and almost see-through to you. So when a spirit looks at the wall, they don't see a wall, because that's a material wall with no spirit body or no spirit form. All they see is the atomic structure of the wall, but they can see straight through it. So right at the moment, there could be thousands of spirits, and there are actually thousands of spirits looking at us, but they're not sitting in the hall with us, because to them the hall doesn't exist. Does that make sense? They can actually pass through the material matter. Now, some of you may have even had that sensation at times where you felt almost like a spirit passed through you. Have any of you felt that feeling, like you come over, and then this feeling came over you like somebody was passing through you and then out the other side? So a spirit can actually, if you were laying on your bed or something, a spirit could look through all of your organs and see which one's working right and see which one's not working too good, and see what emotion is affecting that particular organ. And the higher the development of the spirit, the more they would see of your body. So that's what they see. They see mostly the spirit body. If the spirit is developed in divine love, he or she will mostly see your soul. So they'll see your emotions and your desires and your passions and your inspirations, and they'll see all of the things that happened in your life. So you remember all those shameful things you did that you don't want to remember? Well, they can see them too. Right? So they see them. But of course, because they're in a higher condition of love, they don't want to use that against you. Right? They only want to help you with those things, right? And remember all those things that you have forgotten in your life? You know, some of you, when you think about it, how many of you can think back when you were 3 and know what happened? Now, some of you can do that, right? But others can't do that. Now, if we can't do that, the spirit can easily do it, because if they're connected to their own soul and they're on the divine love path, they'll be able to actually see every single memory of every single event that affected your life. Now, that can be very helpful to you, right? If you're not remembering it, and they are, that can help you quite a lot. Or if the spirit is in a really dark condition, they can look at all of those events that have happened and say, this person's got a predisposition to drinking. So what I can do, under certain circumstances, I can get a drink out of him, right? I can actually motivate him into going to a pub and having a few, and then he has a bit too many, and then I can actually help him walk out and go home even. Like, and this is why sometimes when we drink, many of us who have drank to the point of excess have a gap in our memory sometimes of even that happening. And that's because somebody else was now handling our body for us, keeping us going, so that they could get certain emotions themselves fulfilled. So can you see straight away that what a spirit sees of you and what you are will totally depend upon what the spirit sees compared to what you are, will totally depend upon their own condition. If they're in a poor condition, all they're going to see is somebody they can use. You know? You think about it on earth. Quite often you walk up to a person and you can feel them analysing you just for what they can get out of you, can't you, sometimes? You can feel that emotion projected at you. Well, that's what a lot of spirits in dark condition are like. They just look at you and say, lovely person. They don't even say, lovely person. They go, problem in this area, I can use that. That's all they see. So with me, with some unworthy feelings, they can just connect with those unworthy feelings, say, this person's unworthy. If I put him in the situation where, or I help him get into the situation where such and such is occurring, then I can make him feel worse. And I might enjoy that. You know, some spirits might enjoy that process.
Hello. Who are these spirits and how many are there around us?
Well, that's what I'd like to discuss with you firstly, is for a start, they are just people who have passed. Often they are people you know, but often they are people that you don't even know. Because if you can think about it for a moment, when I pass, I have unlimited access to anywhere on earth just by where I want to go. So it's a bit like, imagine for a moment you could automatically teleport and you could do it invisible to what other people see. Where would you go? Now, for some people who have some sexual issues, they might go to the bedroom of every single person's flat and watch what's going on there. Does that make sense? Depending on what they feel. For other people, they might sit around their family members and looking at where they cheated on them when in the past. And, you know, or they might look at where they had, you know, taken money or stolen things from them in the past and project a heap of anger at them. It just depends on what their desire are. And we'll talk about that. But if we can just picture the person as just a standard person, that's all the spirit is, just a person who's passed into the spirit world and no longer has a physical body attached. So in other words, this body, this physical body has now disappeared. That's the only difference between you and a spirit. The only difference. You still have the same thoughts, you still have the same feelings, you still have the same intentions, you still have the same likes, you still have the same dislikes, you still have the same emotional errors within yourself, you still have some big desires maybe. There's certain people that you don't like very much at all and you still feel that way about them. There's certain people you love intensely and you still feel that way about them. Nothing has changed except for one thing, and that is you don't have a body, a physical body anymore that person can touch. That's the only difference. That's the only difference between a spirit and you. No, there's no other difference.
Do we have a spiritual body now?
Yes. Yep, certainly. Every single person who's ever been incarnate, and as soon as you are conceived, two bodies are created. You've got the physical body that's created as that grows, and the spirit body also is created in a very similar way with the merging of some genetic structure, and that also grows. So two bodies, a spirit body and a physical body, are created at the time of your conception.
And do they always stay together?
Well, the only time they don't is when our physical body dies. And when our physical body dies, there's a separation that occurs. What happens is there's this energetic, you could think of it like a cord with a plug on the end of it, plugged between the two bodies. And what happens is, and a spirit, when you talk to spirits, they'll describe it as it stretching and snapping. In other words, the actual plug with the connector between the bodies disconnects from each other. And what's actually happening is the soul has all of these sensory apparatus, five of which are our sight, our taste, our, you know, all smell and all those kind of five basic senses. They are a part of the sensory apparatus of the soul. The spirit body has some that sensory apparatus, and the physical body does too. But when the cord disconnects, it's the spirit body that starts feeling the sensory apparatus primarily. So the instant you die, the instant the silver cord snaps, from that moment on, you're seeing through your spirit body and you're not going to be able to see through your physical body anymore. And from that point on, when you touch somebody, you're touching somebody with your spirit body. You're not touching them with your physical body because that sensory apparatus has now been disconnected, if you like. And that's all that happens when you die. That's it. There's no other change. Aside from that, you are an identical person, pretty much. Of course, there might be a few instantaneous belief changes. So, for example, let's say I don't believe in an afterlife at all. The instant that I pass and my physical body dies, I'll be looking down at my physical body and going, maybe there is an afterlife after all, right? So that might be one of the first realizations that I have, right? I'm looking down there, and quite often you see people who have had these, what are they called, near-death experiences. They hover over and they can see their own physical body and they remember seeing their own physical body. And when you disconnect from your physical body, you can actually watch what happens to it. So imagine there, you're in this body, the spirit one there, looking down at your physical one that you've been disconnected from, and you're watching it go into a crematorium. So that'd be pretty challenging if you still wanted to keep connected to your body, wouldn't it? Like, but see, what happens for most people when they pass, the first realization they have, obviously, is that they're still alive. By the way, that doesn't always occur, but it happens sometimes. And I'll talk about what actually happens when you pass in a minute, in terms of what really happens compared to what everybody hopes happens and thinks happens.
Yep. Thanks, sir. With what you were saying before about the minute somebody's born, two bodies are created, right?
When they're conceived.
Yeah, when they're conceived.
Yep.
Sorry, yep.
Yep.
You said the soul body and the human body, the, you know, material body is created. How does that work with reincarnation if it's created on conception?
It's exactly the same. Remember, it's the soul that attaches to the bodies. So the soul is the thing. If there is reincarnation, and we'll talk about reincarnation as part of this discussion, but the soul itself, when it reincarnates, attaches to two new bodies, a spirit body and a physical body, in exactly the same way as if the person is in their first incarnation.
Oh, so the spirit's not always connected to the spirit body.
Yeah, it's the soul. Real you. And these bodies are just the tools that the real you uses to express itself.
Oh, yeah. Right. Thank
Does
you.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And those two tools are created at the time of conception. So whether you're reincarnated or incarnated for the first time, you have two bodies created. And so a spirit cannot reincarnate unless they don't have their spirit body anymore. And we'll talk about that as to what goes on there.
Thank you.
Does that make sense? And it's important to talk about reincarnation later in our discussion because there are a lot of problems that happen on Earth because of beliefs in reincarnation that are false. And we'll talk about why that happens as we go through our discussion.
Can actually the spirit touch a physical body once they pass?
Yes, the spirit body can touch the physical body and actually feel a sensation from doing so. Just like the spirit can also touch any matter that's physical and move it around. So you've all heard of people who have had things moved, or, you know, so-called ghosts in the house, right? Where certain things move from one location to the other. Well, how did that happen? It happened because of the spirit being able to move something from one location to the other, the spirit person. And a spirit person is totally able to touch you and feel a sensation in themselves from doing so. Whether you feel it or not will depend upon whether you're sensitive to your spirit body at that moment in time or not. And for many of us, we're not. We're very detuned from our spirit body, so we often don't feel when a spirit does touch us.
Okay. So how can we learn that? Because you mentioned earlier that you see all these things, and, I mean, I've been learning that for years, and I still can't.
The secret to learning everything with regard to divine truth is always to focus on the soul. And that's what I call your soul development. So in other words, bringing your passions, desires, emotions and everything in harmony to love. It's not an intellectual process. It's the process of releasing your emotions so that you can get to a point where you're automatically loving. And as you do that, all of a sudden senses that you have that you weren't conscious of before start to develop very rapidly. And one of those senses is all to do with your spirit sight and being able to feel the spirit, being able to hear spirits and so forth. That's one of the natural senses that God created inside of us that we can automatically have something happen with once we develop this part of ourselves. So what happens for a lot of people is they automatically have some of those abilities because they were born without certain emotions that prevent those abilities from occurring. for the majority of us, what happens is we're born with lots of emotions because of the emotions of our parents and the environment that cause us to not see spirits and cause us to not hear spirits, because to be frank, it just freaks out most people. And so they detune from all of those things emotionally, and that then causes damage to our children, who then detune and so forth. Many of you have had children, right, who have been very sensitive to spirits, but then after a little while they've become less sensitive to spirits. And one of the reasons why is because they feel our emotions, and they feel like to get our approval they need to detune from their own ability, and after a while they become what they feel to be normal. But in reality, we're created in our normal condition to actually see spirits just like we see each other sitting here right now. That's how we're really being created. But we just have lost that ability through lots of different emotional injuries. So if we focus on this soul condition as our primary focus, we will always have all of these other things, all of these spirit communication and other things, they'll all eventually come to us.
AJ, with a sensation of when you feel stuff around your crown and the side of your head,
yep,
is that spirit actually touching you or something actually entering into you?
Depends on where you're feeling the sensations. Often sensations from the crown are actually involved with a transmission and reception of love, in particular transmission and reception of divine love. So many times this crown chakra will be open to God when you're praying or something like that, and you'll feel sensations from your crown. But with spirits, they usually connect through what you would call your third eye chakra, right, which is the sixth chakra. And remember that you have hundreds of chakras, not just seven, but the chakra points are actually the crossover of large meridians of energy, of which we have seven primary large meridians of energy. And the sixth one happens at the front and rear of your skull, basically. And the way that many spirits connect to you, and you'll feel sensations from many spirits, will be through the back of and the sides of your skull, in the third eye chakra region.
So it's actually a transmission. They're not actually touching you. It's transmission of information or love or whatever.
So, yeah, what a spirit who's at a really good soul condition is able to do is they're able to give you packets of information very, very rapidly. So a low spirit who's in a poor condition emotionally can't do that, but a spirit who's in a very, very good condition emotionally can just give you a feeling, and then all of a sudden it's like you've had like a whole description of something just enter you. And those kind of things occur from spirits talking to you. And to be frank, spirits talk to you all the time. They're talking to you all the time. They're influencing you emotionally all the time. Some of those spirits are malevolent in that they want to harm you. Some of those spirits are benevolent in that they want to help you. Some of those spirits think they're benevolent when they're malevolent. In other words, they think they know what's good for you when they don't really, right? And a lot of spirits are all in different conditions, just like a lot of people on earth are in different conditions. So many of you know that your mums think they know better than you do about your life, right? Many of you felt that emotion from your mum, right? Or your father. Now, that doesn't mean they do know better than you about your life. It just means they think they know. Now imagine if they passed over in the spirit world. Do you think they'd change that opinion? Of course not. Wouldn't that opinion even grow further? I'm invisible now. I can investigate more now. I think I know more about your life now than ever before. And so that could have a big influence on you emotionally, having a family member pass who's in a bossy condition like that. And that can influence you quite a lot. And what we want to talk to about today is how that occurs. Does that make sense? We want to talk about that. And we'll answer a lot of these questions as we progress. So let's just progress a little further, because I want to describe what happens when you die, really, and what a lot of people think happens when they die that don't happen at all. It just doesn't happen at all. So let's just talk about these different places, this different state of death. So remember that your soul is a half of a soul. Alright, so I'll draw it. Remember, I'm drawing it like there's the whole soul, but you are actually one half of a soul. And when we incarnate, that one half of the soul connects to bodies. So if it's the male half of the soul, in this case with a dominantly male aspect, it will connect to two bodies that have been created, both at the time of conception, a spirit body and a physical or a material body. So there's the soul, and you could say that's the half of the soul. So I'm a half of the soul, and my soul mate is the other half of my soul. Right? And every one of you is a half of the soul, not a complete soul. You're a half of the soul. And we're connected to this body, of which we have two, the spirit body and the material body. Now, I go through life, I gather all sorts of experiences. Sometimes my life might be quite short. I might even die when I'm in utero. I might even die before I'm born. We call that a miscarriage, right? Or an abortion. But that's the death before I'm born. But I've still now incarnated. So the half of the soul has incarnated and attached to two bodies, even through that process. So it doesn't matter when I pass, from the moment of that incarnation onwards. So I could pass when I'm inside the womb, or I could pass when I'm 95 years of age, or historically there's even been people who've passed hundreds of years old. Right? And I could pass any time in that, but all through that time I am assimilating information through my body. Through this physical body initially, and then when I die, which means my material body is now rotting away, so I'm not connected to that body anymore, I'm now assimilating emotional and other experiences through my spirit body. That's the only difference with regard to death. So the only difference with regard to death is just this one difference. I don't have a material body I can use anymore. That's the only thing that happens when you die. Now, what doesn't happen when you die? What doesn't happen is you don't automatically become all-knowing. Right? In other words, you're going, a lot of people think that, right? They think, oh, when I die, it's all going to be good, right? Because I'll all of a sudden know everything and everything will be fine. But that's not what happens at all. And in fact, if you talk to spirits in the spirit world, many of them feel they even know less than what they knew when they're on earth, because they've had to give up lots of beliefs they had on earth because they now know them to be false. Right? So a lot of the times when we die, at the instant of death, the only thing that is changed is that I don't have a material body that I can use anymore to affect the material world. That's the only change. I don't change in my soul condition. I don't change in my beliefs most of the time. I don't change in my desires. I don't change in my passions. I don't change in most of my emotions, except maybe a few. We'll talk about the few that we often do change. I might not even be aware that I've died. And in fact, there are many people who pass, because they still can have a body they can touch, they believe that they are still actually alive on earth. Now, many of you have heard the term earthbound, right? That's what a person who's earthbound is. They actually still believe themselves to be alive on earth in a physical body. I've talked to some of them, and some of them have said things like, you know, nobody listens to me anymore, right? I go around and knock on their door and they don't answer, but I know they're inside. Like, and they actually have these experiences in the spirit state that they don't understand, because they still believe they actually are alive on the earth. Right? So just because your body dies, it doesn't mean that you even know that you've died. Will you imagine, what have we been told about death generally? A lot of times we're told, we watched a movie yesterday, what's it called? The Invention of Lying. It had potential, but it wasn't as good as what I hoped. But we watched this movie, and one of the things that became clear in the movie was that they really didn't know what happened when you die. And the majority of people on Earth in the movie had this belief that when you die, you're just nothing. That was the belief they had. You're just dead as a doornail. And they called it eternal non-existence. Right? I hope I'm not spoiling the movie for you, but anyway, it's just one aspect of it. And to be frank, a lot of people on this planet have that belief, don't they? That when you're dead, that's it. There is no afterlife, there is no spirit body, there is no soul. All of those beliefs. Now imagine if you had that belief before you passed into the spirit world. Well, if you could still touch a body and you have a belief in your mind that if I have a body, I'm still alive on earth, are you going to believe it's actually a different kind of body? Probably not. Right? And so you might go along for years in that state, roaming around the earth, wondering why nobody's listening to you anymore, but some people do, but other people don't. And then some people who you can touch do, and you don't realise that they're actually spirits who have died as well, right? And so there's some people you can touch, and yeah, I can touch them, but this other person, and I go like that, and I go through them, like, how does that happen? What goes on there? And I don't understand. I'm going to think that, oh, I don't know what's going on now. This is a bit crazy. Something's changed. I don't know what's changed. And I don't often realise that the only thing that's changed is that I died and my physical body is no longer able to be used by me, and so I'm now in my spirit body. Right? Now, imagine if you've passed into that state. You would often hang around the earth because you don't know where else to go, do you? You haven't learnt anything else. You don't know anything about a spirit world or, you know, progression, or even perhaps know much about how to progress. And then some spirits come along, you know, and you don't see them properly. Like, you just see them like these wavy forms and they start speaking to you and, oh, like, well, that's a bit weird. And if I had a feeling of fear in me, do you think I'd listen to them? I'd go, oh, I'm a ghost. There's ghosts here. There's ghosts here now, right? Like, this is written a change too. And can you see that I might be a spirit and actually be meeting other spirits who I actually feel are ghosts? Right? Because of my belief system, my belief structure. You see, because my soul doesn't change when I pass, all of my belief structures remain intact most of the time when I pass. So whatever I believe often is my starting point for my new life in the spirit world. Now, that could be very confusing, couldn't it? Don't you think? With some sets of beliefs. Let's say I'm a Christian and I was really a big practicer of, you know, like I'd go along to church and we'd do our hallelujahs and we'd have these big emotional experiences happening and things like that, and I feel like I've been blessed by the Holy Spirit and I'm talking about all these different things on earth, and then all of a sudden I die. What do I expect? Well, I'd probably expect, I want to see Jesus, you know. I want to be right by God's right hand, just like Jesus is. I want to be up there in the, you know. And sometimes we even expect to be playing a harp and, you know, singing or whatever. Some people have these expectations, right? And like I've heard of little children who have been in these religious backgrounds and met them myself, where they've actually thought that when they passed over, they'd be playing a harp, because on Sunday or Saturday when they went to their church, that's what they sung about all the time when they died. So they actually believed even the song as being literal. So imagine that. I'm in this state where that's not happening. In fact, I'm not seeing Jesus at all. And most of the time I'm not even seeing another spirit who's even thinking or believing the same things as me. But what would you do then? Like, what would you feel then? Like, it'd be pretty disappointing, wouldn't it? Like, and confusing. I had all these beliefs about what might happen, and none of those beliefs are coming true. What's going on? What's going on? There's something going on with my sound system. So if that's the case, then obviously it's going to be really important for me if I can learn about this before I pass. Because after I pass, if I'm trying to investigate it then, I'll often be for years trying to investigate things and I've got no idea about. And then depending on my soul condition, I'll go to a location where everybody else believes the same thing. So you imagine that. I don't believe that there is an afterlife. As soon as I get to this afterlife, what's going to happen? My soul is going to attract a whole other group of people who also don't believe in an afterlife. And we're all going to sit around and talk and have interactions and maybe work and create things, and because of course you can do all of those things in the spirit world. But in the end, I will still not believe that I'm in an afterlife. Can you see that? Welcome. So can you see that what my beliefs are while I'm on earth is going to have a big effect on me when I pass into the spirit world? Now, many of the spirits who are here with us today are here because they are still not sure about where they are. And they are not sure about why they are where they are either. Because they don't understand how the spirit world works. You imagine if you've never seen even the Introduction to the Universe DVD that you've seen, you imagine passing into the spirit world, what would you believe? Like, what would you believe about what's actually happening? If we have a microphone, there's one just behind you, actually.
Do souls and spirits have a thought process or memory?
Remember, when you're a spirit, you have exactly what you have right now.
Okay.
So you have a memory, thought processes, belief systems, everything. So you are totally able to investigate everything, but how would you when you don't believe in a lot of things?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know?
They have memory and can store their... Yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of times what happens to many of these spirits when they pass is they think, oh, Joe Blow, he talked to me about passing once. And I didn't listen to him much at all at the time because I thought he was an idiot, right? But now I realise I've passed. I think maybe I'll go and visit Joe Blow, who's still alive on Earth, and maybe he'll be able to tell me something more about where I am, right? So as soon as they have the feeling to go there, bang, they're there next to Joe Blow, and they're watching him, and he's not thinking about me at all. And I'm trying to project at him, think about me, think about AJ. Can you tell me what's going on with my life? And all of a sudden he has a thought about AJ because of this feeling that he's getting from me, and he goes, oh, AJ's around me, oh yeah, he should be in a pretty good place actually. And I'm going, no, I'm not in a good place, I want to know from you where I am, you know. And then he's not telling me, he's actually thinking that I'm fine and I'm not, I don't feel fine. And so I go, oh, okay, maybe somebody else. So I watch who he goes to, you know. And occasionally he goes and visits a medium who I can talk to, so I'm following along in the spirit world when he goes along to the medium, right? And I'm sitting there, I want to talk to him, you know? And eventually the medium says, oh, there's an AJ here who wants to say some things, right? Oh, yeah, how's he doing now? Well, I don't want to tell him that I'm doing terrible, right? Because, you know, if he knew that, he might be pretty sad. Like, so I say, oh, I'm okay, but I want to know some things. So I'm sitting around, I'm not going to hear anything from my friend, so I'm going to go to the medium. Let's call the medium Clara, right? So Clara's there. So I sit around Clara for a while now, trying to learn something about the spirit world from her, right? She's talking to spirits all the time, but half the time she doesn't even know who she's talking to. And I see her talking to an old lady, and she reckons it's a young person. And I see her talking to this creepy, like, sexual creepy man, you know? And she thinks he's fine, and I'm going, boy, she doesn't know much either of what's going on in the spirit world either, right? So then I start trying to find somebody else who might know more. So I have the ability, because of my intellect and my desire, I have the complete ability to investigate anything I want. But of course, there's a lot of investigating that I'm doing, but the people think that things are going on that I can see are totally different to what's going on. And so I start getting really confused about that. But doesn't anybody know about what's going on in the spirit world? And the truth is, on this planet, there are very few people who actually know what's going on in the spirit world. And so I get really down about that now. Like, how do I find out about truth? It hasn't occurred to me yet, perhaps, that other people have passed ahead of me and they might know more than me. But then I think, oh, you know, my old friend Doug, you know, he passed 70 years ago, you know, when I was a childhood friend of mine, you know, when I was 10, he passed. He's been here 70 years. He might know a lot more than me. So I have a feeling for Doug. So I feel for Doug. And all of a sudden Doug's there, and Doug's this like he's in good shape, you know. He's looking good. He's looking young. And I look at him and think, are you Doug? Like, I can't remember looking like you. But now Doug's all like grown up, 25 years of age, looking in the spirit world in quite good condition. And Doug can now start telling me some of his experience. Of course, it doesn't mean that his experience is even true or the full truth about what happens in the spirit world. It just means that it was his experience. And so I can investigate that and listen and trust and listen and try to determine myself what's going on with the experience. So can you see it's almost like learning on earth? We go to one person, you know, we get some things that sound good, and go to another person, yeah, that doesn't sound too good, so, and I have some emotions about that particular thing. Like, I don't know how many of you thought about spirits when you were first told about them. Most people go, oh, what a load of rubbish, right? Like, as if that's the truth. Like, many of us do that, right? But if we from a very young age could see spirits, we would never have that feeling, would we? We'd go, of course there's spirits, right? But many of us haven't had that, and so we grow up with all of these different feelings. Imagine if we passed before we knew. How would your life be in the spirit world? It'd be quite hard, wouldn't it? You wouldn't know what's going on. And this is the problem with untruth. The problem with untruth is it has a very large effect on your soul and on your long-term development. And this is why we definitely need to have more truth on the planet about all of these different things. So, getting back to our discussion, we've now passed, we're now a half a soul, and by the way, the majority of spirits don't even know they're a half a soul. They don't even know that they've got a soul mate. Right? So, but this is the truth, I'm a half a soul and I'm still connected to my spirit form. And I still have the ability to investigate anything I wish, any way I wish, up until a point. And the point is dependent upon this thing called my soul condition. And my soul condition, which is my condition in particular with regard to love, is going to determine how much I can investigate without assistance from somebody else. Now, if my condition is in a very unloving place, like let's say I passed over as a murderer, my condition is going to be in a very unloving place, and as a result of that, the people that are surrounding me are going to be mostly murderers. Am I going to learn much truth from them? Probably not. But then there's a whole group of spirits around them who know a lot more truth to help murderers, but it just depends on whether the murderer trusts them enough to listen to the truth, right? And so my soul condition is that I don't trust anybody. Am I going to trust one of those spirits? Probably not. So I might stay in this state for a long time until I work through my lack of trust in somebody else. Does that make sense? And then once that happens, now I can listen to somebody who's in a higher condition who can tell me some more truth. So at the moment there's a lot of spirits here, and I just want to say one thing to them, and that is the brightness of the body, I'm talking about the spirit body, the brightness of the spirit body determines how much truth is in the person's soul. So this is a very basic thing to remember when you pass over. Or if you're already passed, the brightness of the spirit body determines how much truth is in the soul of that person. So, if a person's so bright you can hardly look at them, then they've got a lot of truth in their soul, and if you listen to them, you might progress very rapidly, right? But if a person's in a really dark condition, even darker than your own body is, in other words, they look almost like they look very dark and grey, blacky type of body, you know they're not a black person, but they look like a black body, and they're in a much darker space than you are, then you know that if you listen to them, you're probably not going to hear much truth. Because it's the light, the brightness of the body that determines how much truth and love is inside of the soul. That's a basic thing to remember. But a lot of spirits don't even know that, right? So they pass over, they see some bright spirits go past, oh yeah, there's some dark spirits go past, oh yeah. No worries. You know, what significance does that have to you when you don't know? It has no significance, does it? Right? So what do? You just, you know, eventually what happens is you generally long for people that you know. And that's what normally happens when a person passes in the spirit. So they long for old relatives or old mates that have passed, you know, previously or so forth. And those people come to them and start educating them about what they personally have learned about the spirit world. But for the majority of spirits, because our soul condition is so poor on the earth generally, the majority of spirits, what happens is they become attracted or re-attracted to the earth again. In other words, what they wanted, all the people they love are still on earth. All the things they love are still on earth. You know, their house, their new car they bought last week, that's still on earth. You know, their partner that they might love, that's still on earth. Their children that they love are still on earth. So where do you think you're going to be attracted to? You're going to be attracted, oftentimes, back to earth. And then imagine when you pass, there'll be lots of people crying for you, won't there? Often you go to, like, when you go to a funeral, you see all the people who loved that person, and what's normally happening? They're normally crying quite a lot, right? And all this grief is coming up towards you. So you feel that as a barrage of grief. And you're going, but I'm still alive, I'm still alive. And you try telling some of them that you're still alive. But they're not hearing you because they don't necessarily believe in what happens after, they don't agree with what happens after you die either. And so what happens is that we're often trying to run around helping people emotionally in the spirit world. We're running around helping people emotionally on earth come to terms with the fact that we're still alive and we haven't actually died. Right? And that's a pretty emotionally exhausting place to be too. Because you're going around trying to cheer everyone up who's crying about you dying when you're still alive. And they feel a loss of you, and yet you're sitting right next to them saying, you know, and you're even giving them a hug sometimes, and they can't feel it. Right? So what do you do then? Like, it's just so confusing. Many of you have seen What Dreams May Come, the movie What Dreams May Come. How many of you have seen that? Yeah, about half. If you haven't seen that, worth seeing. It's a good movie. It's got Robin Williams in it. It's called What Dreams May Come, and it goes through some of the experiences that many people pass over into in the spirit world. And by the way, all of that movie takes place in the first sphere of the spirit world, right? In terms of all the things you see, including the most prettiest places you see in that movie, they're all in the first sphere of the spirit world. But anyway, what happens a lot of the times is we start investigating things over a period of time. Because we still have intellect, of course. We still have desires. But often we're drawn back to the earth. So you imagine this is a man who's now in the spirit world. So he's somewhere in the first sphere of the spirit world. Or you could call it the first dimension or space. The first dimension above the physical. And here on earth, there's all the people that he loves, right? His wife and maybe his children are there, right? And then he's got his mates. And then he's got his car that he loves. I'm not very good at drawing a car, but, you know, like, you know, that he loves, and so forth, right? And all of his loves are on the earth. So he's going to be very drawn back to what his loves are, because remember, we're drawn by our soul's desires. Now this is for the average person who passes. You know, average dad, let's say, with a couple of kids and wife and a mortgage and all that kind of thing. Now, of course, these principles that I'm talking to you about are very different for every single individual, because every single individual has different emotional condition, different intellectual condition, different memories, different belief systems, and so forth. And it's the sum total of all of those things that make up your soul condition. And so therefore it's the sum total of all of those things that make up what you're going to experience when you pass. Right? So this man now feels very drawn back to them. So he goes back to his wife and she's crying. Now he, if he loves his wife, he's going to feel really strong about that, isn't he? He might even be crying along with her, saying, I'm not dead, but I wish we knew how to, I wish I could talk to you somehow. And then you might even go off, the spirit might even go off and investigate. Is there a way to talk to people on earth? And then he hears back, yeah, there was. You know, you've got to find a person. They call them mediums or prophets down on the earth, right? And if you find one of those persons, you can get a message to your husband or wife or, you know, loved one. So often they go along to a medium and, you know, you've seen the movie Ghost? You remember Whoopi Goldberg with this long line of spirits all there? trying to tell this person this, tell that person that. That's what it's like for many mediums. You know, they have a long line of people lined up waiting for a message to be given to a person on earth. Just a message of love, that I'm still alive, that this, you know, just the basic things like that. Now, while this man's doing all of that, is he changing very much yet? Not really, is he? He's learning some things about his new condition because of his desires. But if he knew a lot more about the truth, he'd be able to progress very rapidly in the spirit world and also probably connect to his family a lot stronger on earth as well. But because he doesn't know the truth, he's investigating the truth and he's only seeing what he believing what he's seeing still, because that is the belief he had when he was on earth. I only believe what I can see. So that is retained with him in the spirit world. He's going to really struggle to actually assimilate more truth, aside from the truth that he's actually died. Right? And what often happens is some spirits come along and show him his funeral, for example. But a lot of spirits don't believe it. They just say it's a dream. You know how you wake up from a dream sometimes and it's so real, and you wake up and you think, you know, like, I don't know about you, but like years ago I used to have a dream where I woke up and the woman lying next to me is not my wife, right? And I just freak out, like, because it's so real sometimes, isn't it? That it takes you half an hour just to calm down from it. Now imagine you're in the spirit world thinking that this, what's going on, might be just a dream. So that'd be hard to deal with that, wouldn't it? You'd have to work your way through all of that, and why can't I get out of this dream, and lots of different emotions going through. Now, what starts to happen is this man starts realising his true condition, that he has died. And he also is very, very attracted still to what's going on earth. Now, if that was you, what would you do? See, a lot of times what you would do is you would stay around the earth, wouldn't you? Like getting to know each of your family better, you know, spending time with them and doing things with them often. Now, remember, each night when every one of these family members go to sleep, you can interact with them, because in your sleep state, that's what happens. You interact with people who are dead or asleep. And so each night you meet up with them again and, oh, didn't we have fun today? And then they wake up in the morning and they can't remember that. And then you feel a big disappointment about that. But that would go on, might even go on for years. And in fact, it might go on until all of your family have died. And then they're all with you in the spirit world. Now what do you do? Now, for most people, that's the time when they start to make progression in the spirit world, when they start investigating the truths of what's in the spirit world. Because all of their loves from earth are now with them in the spirit world. Does that make sense? And so now there's very little tying them to earth. Now, let's just see what happens now if this man is a person with some unhealed emotions inside of them. So let's say this man has an emotion in him that he's angry with mother. Alright? So he's angry with his mum. Now, his mum is still on the earth. And he's died and he's angry with his mother. What's going to be happening? Part of the time that he's investigating his family and his friends and everything, he's going to go to his mother, isn't he? You know, his mother thinks about him, so he goes to his mother, but he's angry with his mother, and what is he going to do? He's going to go at his mother, right? And the mother goes, ugh, you know, like she's, often you can feel this in your awake state on earth. You feel this terrible emotion all of a sudden. Whoa, something's going on here. Something outside of my body is happening. And if we wait for the microphone, so.
When you, I mean, if somebody you've noticed is like thrashing around in their sleep every night, punching, kicking, screaming, yelling, and they've got no recollection of it the next day, but this just goes on and on and on constantly every night. What
they're having some very hard to handle sleep state experiences. So what's going on in their sleep is that they're obviously in the spirit world in a place that's not very pleasant, and they're actually going through a lot of emotions in the process. They're probably dealing with unhealed emotional fears in their awake state, but because they're not releasing them in their awake state, they're attracting fearful events in their sleep state. And this happens to people a lot. And many people who don't sleep at all also have a deep fear of what's going on in their sleep state. So they won't remember it when they wake up, but when they're asleep, they do know what's going on. The key for them is to look at what's going on in their awake state. So if you can tell them, all right, you were very afraid last night, you were thrashing around, yelling and screaming and seemed really frightened, right, then they can sit down and say, all right, I've got some unhealed emotions about fear that I need to release in my day-to-day life. Once I release that, I won't attract fearful events in my sleep. So if you can just remember that when you're in your sleep, it's just like your spirit body has left your material body for that time you're asleep. That's all that's happening, right? And it attracts, just like the law of attraction works in every other case, your soul attracts what it needs to deal with unhealed emotion in your sleep state as much as it does in your awake state. And you have the ability to work your way through it. Most of the time, though, we don't want to remember it in our awake state, which means when we wake up in the morning, we can't remember that all night we were thrashing about. And we often need someone to tell us, you were thrashing about last night, you were quite afraid, and then we can start looking at what emotion we're denying in our awake state. Does that make sense? So my suggestion for that example is to talk about the fear the person has in their awake state. What are they afraid of? Because there's some fears that they need to look their way through.
AJ, what's sleep apnea then, when people stop breathing in their sleep? What's it all
about? Often shock type events in their sleep state.
Is that caused by a causal emotion, that, or is that
always? And remember, every single thing that happens to you and every single malady, illness, sickness, disease that you get is all about your law of attraction, about an unhealed emotion inside of yourself.
So that could be a childhood shock.
Could be childhood trauma or shock that's causing when they go to sleep, something is attracted to them in their sleep state, they hold their breath for a long time until now their body is almost like getting to the point where it's running out of oxygen, and all of a sudden they breathe again, you know, and away that happens. So that's often based on childhood trauma in a person's life that's unhealed emotionally. Yeah? Every single thing that happens is related to an unhealed emotion. Yep. Whatever happens in your sleep state is also the same as in your awake state. All right. So imagine he's angry with his mother. She's sitting on earth. You know, every time he sees his mother, he's going to project that anger at her, isn't he? Every single time. And a lot of times when you're in the spirit world, you can't help your emotions as much. You know, here on earth, you can get away with your emotions a lot by just maintaining a nice, calm face, right? When inside, really, you're boiling, or inside you're afraid, or inside something else is going on for you, right? So a lot of times what happens is we are so afraid emotionally inside of us that we are so detuned from what we're giving out to other people emotionally. And in this case, in the spirit world, what happens is it's almost totally the opposite to that. I can't help my emotions anymore. So I go along and meet someone I don't like. I just tell him, I don't like you. You know, I go along and if it's somebody on earth, I'll project on them. I don't like you. You know, why do you do that to me? And if it's his mother, why did you build me when I was... Why, you know, you have all these unexpressed emotions that I need to release. Now, while I don't release them, while I don't take responsibility and release them, what's going to happen is I'm going to be attracted to my mother quite often. I knew one lady who, she'd be driving along in a car, and all of a sudden, one entire side of her body would just go, like, limp. Like, it would all just collapse. And, like, she'd be trying to pull the car outside the road without the use of one leg and one arm and one side of her body, right? And she'd eventually get the car, and quite often be quite dangerous, of course, She'd get the car and she'd stay like that, unable to move, unable to get out of the car for up to an hour. And then all of a sudden, the side of the body, it was always the left side of the body, the side of the body would come good again. And then she'd drive off. But she was getting a bit freaked out, like it was happening quite frequently. And we talked about it, and I said, what are you thinking about when that particular thing happened? And when she started tracing it back, she realised that she was thinking about her stepmother who had passed every single time it happened. Right? And we talked to her stepmother. And this is what was going on for this lady. So you think, here's the stepmother. So the stepmother is in the spirit world. When the stepmother was on earth, she used to beat this girl senseless. The stepmother was jealous of this girl's relationship with her new husband, right? The girl's father. And so she was so jealous that every time the stepmother had an opportunity to hurt the child outside of when the father wasn't around, so when the father wasn't around, she would beat the child. Right? And then she'd tell the father things like, oh, she fell down the stairs, or she did this or did that. Anyway, she passed. And of course, what would you feel if you were this woman on earth? You'd feel quite a lot of anger towards your stepmother, wouldn't you? Don't you think? If you hadn't yet released that emotion, you'd have quite a lot of anger. So here's your part of the soul. So we're female now, so let's... female part of the soul here, and we've got two bodies here, right? So we've got spirit body and material body of the woman on earth, and then the stepmother. What would happen is every time this lady on earth felt a feeling of rage towards the stepmother would automatically be attracted to her because she could feel the feeling being projected at her from the spirit world. Does that make sense? And in fact, you'll learn in your own progression that you can actually feel the projection of every single person around you at any time. And when you're in the spirit world, you're very sensitive to it. In fact, there is actually an energetic cord that's like an energy stream that goes between the two people that you can actually in the spirit world see. Now, when it's anger or rage, it's red in colour and very harmful to you. It feels terrible. So when this lady projected rage at her stepmother, there was this terrible emotion that would come over the stepmother that was red, and so the stepmother could see where it was coming from, and she just used to follow the stream of where it was coming from, and sure enough, it was coming from her stepdaughter. And what she used to do then is she used to have a feeling of, I'm not to blame for what I did, and she used to project rage back again. So she would then get angry with her, she would project back at her stepdaughter, rage. But because she could influence the stepdaughter's body, she would, on the left-hand side, because of the emotional injuries the stepdaughter had, and we'll talk about this later, she could also cause the stepdaughter to lose her control of the left side of her body. And she did that every single time the stepdaughter felt rage towards her. And so even though the stepmother had passed, there was still this relationship going on of the daughter being angry with her and then she being in a rage back again. And it's still exactly the same relationship was really happening. Right down to even physical abuse from the mother to the daughter, which is still happening, even though the daughter, by the way, the lady was 50 years old when we were talking about this happening. What the lady had to do, this lady, was work through issues of, firstly, why she hated her stepmother. Then she had to get into her rage towards her stepmother. Then she had to get into this anger that she felt that covered her fear. And then she got into her grief about what had been done to her. When she allowed herself to feel her grief, this no longer occurred anymore. Right? So when this lady allowed herself to feel her grief, this projection thing no longer occurred anymore. Because it was her grief that it had an opening on the, with your chakras, every time you have an unhealed emotion, it's like an unprotected part of your energetic system, open and exposed to the world at large. And any spirit who has a competing emotion with that, or a sympathetic emotion with that, or the opposite emotion to that, can actually connect to that vulnerability and harm you through it. And this is what was happening to the person on earth. Once she released her grief, which was the cause of this opening, there was no way anymore that this lady in the spirit world could actually harm her anymore. Does that make sense? And because of that, this woman no longer had this right left side of the body collapse that she always had when she was thinking of the lady, because every time now she thought about the stepmother too, she had a feeling of forgiveness towards her rather than anger and rage. And that illustrates what starts to happen. What starts to happen a lot of the times is that we get into these spirit interactions because of our unhealed emotional condition. And we need to look inside of ourselves to actually work through our unhealed condition. Now, what we'll be doing after the break that we have is we'll be talking about, and the break, well, it's not yet for another 15 minutes or so, don't you relax yet. What is the time, by the way? 20 past 30, yeah. We'll wait till close to 3. But what we'll do after the break is we'll talk about how to deal with these interactions, right? Why these interactions actually occur and what's going on within the law of attraction between these interactions to actually help you deal with your emotional condition. Because it's very important that both the spirit and the person eventually deals with the emotion that creates these attractions. Now, on the earth today, almost every childhood disease you can think of is caused by a spirit attraction of some kind. And on the earth today, almost every emotional disorder that you can think of, such as depression, schizophrenia, manic depression, dissociative identity disorder, or multiple personality disorder, some of you would know that. All of these different types of disorders, almost all of them are caused by some spirit attractions that are occurring. A lot of diseases that we have, particularly that we have in children, are caused by spirits who are trying to reincarnate, actually harming children. And we'll talk about how that occurs. Almost every single form of illness that you can think of has generally a spirit component. And that's why it's so important to understand what's going on with the law of attraction. Because when you understand what's going on in the law of attraction, you can start healing a lot of these things without, you know, needing to have invasive surgery and other issues like that. Your body is a natural healing machine as long as it's given the opportunity to do so. And the reason why that is the case is because God created you perfectly. And therefore God created all of these systems perfectly. Even us getting a sickness is a perfect creation based around what needs to be healed in us, like emotionally healed in us. And what we need to do is talk about these things that can occur so that we can understand them better and therefore do something about them. You see, at the moment on the planet, a lot of our diseases and a lot of our illnesses and a lot of our mental illnesses and all of those different kinds of things are caused by not understanding the connection between spirits and people on earth and what's really going on, right? And in fact, many of our long-held belief systems that we have here on earth are actually caused by resistance to new belief systems in the spirit world. And if you can imagine that, let's say you are in a family and that family is a member of a religious institution here on earth. Say let's say they're Catholic. Right. Now, back in the 50s and 60s, what was the Catholic set of beliefs about sexuality? Well, basically, there was no such thing as fun sex, was there? It was all to do with procreation, right? This was before Vatican II. It was all to do with procreation and you know, it was not It was only a holy thing if it was to do with procreation, was their viewpoint. And there was no such thing as allowing for people to have contraception. Like, if you took contraception, that was a major sin. Right? Now imagine if you passed with that set of beliefs for a moment. So you passed it. Sex is bad unless it's for the creation of children, that there's no such thing as contraception, you shouldn't be having any contraception at all, you should only have sex for having children, and it's very, very bad of you to have sex for enjoyment. Right? And you pass with that feeling. Now, let's say also, you also pass with the additional feeling of this, that is all God's truth. So in other words, you believe that God thinks that way. And you've passed. Now the next generation, your children are now growing up on the earth. And you're the mother or the father of those children. And the girls that are looking for contraception, you know, the 60s, 70s, they're starting to look at getting contraception and having sex with all these different guys, like, and you're the dad with that set of beliefs. Like, what are you going to do? You'd be spending quite a lot of your time trying to control your daughter or shame your daughter into a totally different set of events, wouldn't you? And you'd often spend a lot of time projecting that, just like you would if you were alive. And so what happens when you die, and when you pass over, often is very, very much the same as what you would have done when you were alive. And now, you may even influence your daughter so much that she comes to believe that that set of beliefs are the only truth about sexuality, right? And you may be able to influence her so much that she would actually be ashamed of herself every time she even has sex and has some joy out of it. You may be able to influence her so much. Now, can you see how one generation with a set of beliefs can easily influence the next generation just by projecting those beliefs? Now, in the spirit world right at the moment, there are literally billions of spirits with the beliefs about reincarnation that are false, for example. Right? There's billions of spirits with beliefs about what we would call Christianity that are false. There's billions of spirits with beliefs about all other forms of religion, some of which are true and false, right? Now, those spirits have a heavy investment in helping you maintain their position. In other words, they have a heavy investment in projecting at you not to change what you feel inside of yourself. Does that make sense? They have a heavy projection at you. And while they have a heavy projection at you, they can easily modify through that projection what you listen to. They can even make you, through some of these connections, go to sleep when you're listening to something important. Right? Now, how many of you have had that happen? Like, you've been listening to something you really want to listen to, really want to listen to, and you're off, right? What goes on there? It's because the spirits with you don't want you to listen. Right? And they can help shut down through some of these unhealed emotional injuries that you have, shut down some of your body systems so that you can't hear it anymore. Right? And this is what happens a lot with New Age circles as well. When we start talking to groups of people about who are on the New Age sort of spiritual paths, about what's really going on in the spirit world, and what's really going on with their connections, oftentimes I see like half the audience go to sleep as a result. And I know I'm not that a good a speaker, but I don't think I'm quite that a bad one either, like they cause half the audience to just drop off when a certain subject is raised. Now, I've had many conversations with mediums and even their own spirit guides through these connections. And it's amazing what happens in some of these conversations. There was one lady who was a medium, has been a medium her entire life. And she's 60 years of age, so she's been a medium her entire life. All she remembers all of her entire life is seeing and hearing spirits. So she's what you would call a natural medium, someone who hasn't had to develop the gift of mediumship very much at all. Anyway, I went along with a friend of mine, John, to see her, and she began speaking to us from her spirit guide. And there's lots of different things that finished up happening in this interaction of us speaking through this medium to her own guide. It was interesting in the first conversation because while we were conversing, she was starting to tell us about what we should eat, right, to help us progress spiritually. And at the time, my feelings were that we shouldn't eat anything to do with meat or animal products at all. So in other words, vegan sort of diet. At the time, my friend still ate meat occasionally. He still ate fish and chicken. So we went along, and her guide was saying that fish and chicken was fine. We needed to have protein in our diet, was what her guide was saying. So I'm listening to this, and John next to me is going, yeah, no worries. So another's believing everything that was coming. And I'm going, no, this doesn't sound right. And then all of a sudden, she heard this huge argument in the spirit world where her guide was arguing with our guides. Right? She's saying, they're all arguing now. And she swore at them and told them to shut up. and all of a sudden, everything calmed down. I said, now, what I want to do, Dot, is listen to what my guides have to say about the subject. And she's listening and she goes, your guides are saying that you shouldn't be eating meat at all. Okay? And what's your guide saying about the subject? Oh, she's saying that you should eat meat because you need protein in the diet. So now I'm getting two different opinions from the spirit world. What do I do with that? Well, you see, if I focus on love, I'll know what to do with that. Because the most loving opinion is going to be the one that's more truthful, isn't it? Right? Now, is killing fish or chicken a loving act? Am I loving the fish or loving the chicken? Obviously not. So I'd be able to determine quite easily which one is the more loving opinion. But if I was just trusting what the spirit was saying to me through her medium, I could easily just go off from that conversation, couldn't I? And believe something entirely different. Anyway, I finished up in another conversation with this same lady, asking her spirit guide. I said, look, I'd like to talk just to your spirit guide. She says, oh, I don't know if that can happen. Like, so she was a bit afraid of that happening. But anyway, she said, all right, the spirit guide's saying all right, so no worries, we'll do that. So I started talking to her guide through the medium and just said to her, what location of the spirit world are you in? And this is, I'll give you some of the answers, I'll write them down, because it just gives you an idea of what people think in the spirit world. I said, what sphere of the spirit world are you in? The lady said she was in the 13th sphere. Her guide said she was in the 13th sphere. And I go, okay. And when you look at the guides that are with me, are they brighter than you or are they not as bright as you? And she said they look brighter than me. So the guides that were with me were brighter than her own condition. And I said, well, how would you like to ask them where they think you are? Right? If they're in a brighter condition, they're probably in a better space of truth, right? So this is what I said to her. How about you ask them what place they are in? There was this thing going on. And the medium starts crying. And so I'm now saying, I can feel what's going on, but I said, what's the matter now? Like, what's going on? And she just started crying even more. And I said, oh, they're saying to you, aren't they, that you're not in the 13th sphere? And she said, yes. What sphere are you in? What do they say, what sphere that you're in? The sphere they said she's in is the second. Now, what do we see from that? The spirit who was guiding this medium all of her life, who believed herself to be in the 13th sphere, was actually in the second sphere of the spirit world. Right? Now, the spheres are just like dimensions. And at the moment, there are 22 of them in the spirit world. And the second one is the one just above the earth plane, if you like. So it's the second sphere. If we can have a mic. Yep. Thanks, Joe.
So, when, like as you said, you've got the second sphere up to the 22nd sphere. How come then that one that is in the second sphere firmly believes that they are in a higher sphere? I mean, wouldn't they know when they're over there that there's so many different spheres?
No. You only know what you pass with knowing. So if you don't know that, then you don't know. And also, in every plane of in each sphere, there are many planes. For instance, in the first sphere of the spirit world, there are thousands of planes, different levels or gradations of love, if you like. The top of this first sphere is called Summerland. Some of you have heard of Summerland? That's the top of the third sphere. That's where a lot of the children go. That's the top of the first sphere. It's very pretty, much prettier than what we have here in Mackay. And sort of a bit like what it is up in the hills, right? Around here, lovely surroundings. Lovely colours, everything colourful, all the animals all in harmony. That's the top of the first sphere. The bottom of the first sphere is the spirits call the hells. And they are like, if you can imagine the darkest place imaginable where you can't even see anything and there's no colour and all you feel is terrible, sad and angry and fear-based emotions, that's what it's like in that location. And there are literally thousands of planes in between those two locations in the one sphere, in the one dimension. Right? And then you get to the second sphere. And the second sphere is like that again, with lots of different planes. So from a progression perspective, if you're progressing, you will feel the progression yourself, and you may assume that that means you're in a new sphere. Or, as... If we use a mic, yeah.
They're not sort of deluding themselves. They really don't know.
They really don't know. That's right. Most of the time they don't know, so they guess. Or sometimes they wish to delude the person they're influencing on earth as to where they are. And so sometimes they do know where they are, but they just lie about it. Because remember, our condition doesn't change just because we pass. If we learn to lie on earth, we're going to continue lying when we pass. Until we deal with the emotion inside of us as to why we're lying. Now, why do we lie on earth? Most of the time it's because we want to make something look like it's not, right? Isn't it? Or because we want to avoid punishment. Or we want to avoid, you know, some kind of physical anger or harm. That's why we lie. And if we have that emotion on earth, when we pass into the spirit world, we're going to have the same emotion. We're going to lie whenever we feel, oh, I'm going to get in trouble here. Let's lie. Get out of that, you know. We're going to have that same emotion. Exactly the same emotion they had just before we passed. So for this lady, she wasn't trying to delude her medium. She just believed herself to be in a much better condition than she actually was. Now what happened in this conversation was she began crying now, and we started talking about some of her emotions that she was holding on to, some of her emotions of anger with men and unworthiness that she had within herself. And she started crying so much that her medium could no longer connect with her anymore. And a week later I rang up the same medium and I said, is she back yet? Like, and no, she still hadn't come back yet from it emotionally. The spirit I'm talking about, the spirit went through this big emotional transformation. Now I talked to that spirit a few weeks later, and that spirit was now on the divine love path and in the fifth sphere of the spirit world. So in other words, in that short couple of weeks period of time, she progressed from the second sphere to the fifth sphere of the spirit world. But the unfortunate thing was that she was going back to the medium to talk to her, but because the medium could feel her as a totally different person who's changed with all of her emotions, she wouldn't believe that that spirit was the same person anymore. And so the medium is still in anger with me about me doing some mumbo jumbo, is what she feels, that caused her to lose her guide. And the truth is that I never did anything to lose her guide. Her guide processed some emotions that moved her to a new spirit location. And then because of the different emotions within her, she felt different to the person on earth. And so the person on earth couldn't tell the difference, or could tell the difference, but couldn't feel like the person was the same person but with a different emotion. And so she disconnected from that person, and she now has a totally different God as a result. And she doesn't want to speak to me at all. Also, that's another result. Because her livelihood was actually driven by her mediumship. So you can imagine the huge effect it's had on her mediumship with others as well, because she had a really strong rapport with this lady in the spirit world. Yeah.
Regarding the spheres, you mentioned that there are 22. Is that relating only to the Earth, or is it relating to other planets in the universe as well?
As far as I'm aware, it's relating to all of the planets in our in the physical system. So you could think of the physical dimension as one dimension, and then the next spirit dimension, the second sphere, is another dimension, and then the third sphere is another dimension, the fourth sphere is another dimension. And at the moment, mathematically, they've proven that there's actually, I think 14 dimensions they've proven mathematically at this point. But these are all these different dimensions, right, that exist, and each one of them is like a universe in their own right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So you said that you were the first to achieve the 22nd sphere, and, I mean, that's a very amazing thing if you think how many other planets and lives are, isn't it?
Yeah, if you think about the universe is an ever-expanding material system. So it's infinite in its expansion. So when a person gets into a new condition of love from the 22nd sphere, another complete dimension will be created, the 23rd sphere, and so forth. And the universe has the capacity to expand exponentially like this, continuously forever. That's the way God created the universe. And it's just absolutely awesome when you start looking back on it after you've experienced a lot of it, like as to how it all actually works. But each dimension is a condition of love. That's the thing to remember. So if you understand love at the soul level, then you'll start to understand how all these dimensions all fit together and what actually goes on in each dimension. And there are people from this earth who are now in the 22nd dimension of the spirit world. And there are also people from the same time that on Earth that are actually in the first sphere still of the spirit world, right? And there's a large variety in between, and it's all based upon your own desire and will as to how you progress.
What about the other planets?
As far as I'm aware, there is no human life form on other planets at this point in time. Right? And I say, as far as I'm aware, I've talked to lots of spirits about it, and I have my own memories about it, but there are life forms with regard to, like, animal life forms on other planets. And a lot of these so-called alien visitors and all those things that we see occurring now are actually spirit materializations that are occurring, right, in all different types of spheres, but any sphere up to the sixth sphere, a person can materialize and even materialize matter. So I've talked to many of the spirits who have materialised this matter and know that many of them are claiming to be aliens but actually are spirits. So that's just something to consider in your own investigation of truth. Yeah? Any other questions about the spirit interaction? Now, with this spirit who I asked, and she said she was in the 13th, but she looked at one of the other guys, saw they were brighter, and asked them, and then they said she was in the 2nd. Now you imagine emotionally how traumatic it would be for you to believe yourself to be in a certain place spiritually, and you've been in that place for many years, and then all of a sudden be told that actually you're not there. Now that's quite... It's a different level of belief that requires, and also it's about yourself. There's going to be huge emotions involved in that process. So this lady went through lots of emotions over the period of the next few weeks, and in the process did obtain to a higher sphere, but in that process disconnected from the medium that she was actually talking to because the medium no longer believed she was the same person. Who's heard of Rampha? Some of you heard of Rampha? Rampha is a spirit who, I should say, was a spirit who... lived in the sixth sphere of the spirit world. So in other words, he lived in the sixth dimension. Now, he was talking, and who's seen What the Bleep Down the Rabbit Hole and those kind of movies, yeah? You'll notice there's a lady in those called JZ Knight, right? Now, she was channeling Rantha. Now, what happened one day was I was talking to one of JZ Knight's followers, like Rantha's followers, and all of a sudden, Rantha was there, and we started conversing about what was going on for him in the spirit world. And he found the divine love path. So he changed his belief system, basically, just in a few moments of discussion. Now, he, within the next few weeks, went from the sixth sphere of the spirit world to the first celestial sphere, which is the eighth sphere of the spirit world. Right? So he had some major transformation. The interesting thing, though, was that he could no longer connect to his own medium anymore. So they'd been together for many years, and he talked to me recently about how many people this had happened with, and it's happened in his life. He's lived nearly 50,000 years in the spirit world, and it's happened over 900 times where he's connected to a medium for a period of time, talked to them, and then all of a sudden lost connection with them for whatever reason, whether they died or passed or something happened emotionally where he moved on and they couldn't connect to them anymore. Right? So there are many spirits in the spirit world who have a deep desire to help you grow, but themselves do not know the full truth of what they're helping you to do. Well, you imagine, how many of us do the same thing here on earth when you think about it? You know, somebody comes along with cancer and what do? Well, if you're a helping type of person, you might go and look up on the internet all the different forms of cures, and you might print them all out and give them to them, and you might like inundate them with information, if you like, a lot of which you don't know whether is true or not. Is that not true? But we do that because we love them and we care for them and we think we're helping them and so forth. And this is what happens in the spirit world a lot too. Oftentimes what we're doing is, in the spirit world, when we're there, we're often helping people, thinking we're helping, but because we don't know the entire truth ourselves, often it's not the help that we're imagining we're giving that actually they receive. And that's a sad fact about the spirit world, unfortunately, is that a lot of times we still have the belief that we know things that we don't know. And because of that, we say things that we shouldn't probably say, and that just propagates error, which eventually comes to be accepted as truth. The teaching of reincarnation is one of those teachings. The truth about reincarnation is very, very different about what people on earth believe reincarnation to be. Right? And the reason why is because there's been historically thousands and thousands and thousands of years of people believing in all sorts or versions of reincarnation. And they believe them with all their life, like with all their heart, their entire life they lived on earth. And they pass over in the spirit world and they try to reincarnate. And they do that by connecting to a child's spirit body. And this is why a lot of children all of a sudden have a heap of knowledge that nobody else knows. Because they're now actually really just channeling a person in the spirit world who knows all these things. Right? And then we think, oh, that's amazing, that's the reincarnation of the Dalai Lama. When in reality, I know 22 Dalai Lamas in the spirit world. Right? Each of whom is actually influencing the next Dalai Lama on the earth. Now, some of those Dalai Lamas have found the divine love path. Some of them have not. And so those ones that haven't are still influencing the next Dalai Lama. And this is why the Dalai Lama, when they're first born, become overcloaked with this state, which they stay in often for the first 12 to 16 years of their life. Right? And then those spirits gradually pull back from them because they've taught the Dalai Lama a lot of things about spirituality over this period of time. Then that Dalai Lama grows old, passes, and then he influences the next one to do exactly the same thing. And this happens, and it has happened for many generations cyclically. Yeah, microphone. Need microphone. You can butt in any time you like, by the way.
Okay, we were having a discussion before about free will.
Yep.
Now, where does the free will of the child come into that if they're overcloaking him
The free will of the child is determined by the free will of the parents. It's the parents that have the free will that is under control here. Now, see, a lot of parents who are brought up in that culture think it to be an honour that their child is the next Dalai Lama. Does that make sense? So they are automatically open to the fact of an overcloaking occurring at the soul condition level, which actually then allows the child to be in a place where they're not protected enough to stop the overcloaking from occurring. And because they're a group of six-tier spirits, or spirits that are on the natural love path in fairly good condition of love, you know, a lot of times the overcloaking isn't harmful, in the sense of malevolent harmful, you know, damaging to the child itself. Oftentimes the child receives glory and attention and other things that the parents desire for it. And it's the parent's soul condition that allows the overcloaking to occur. Right? So the parents need to look at, what are my set of beliefs? Why do I allow this overcloaking to occur? For many people in Eastern philosophies, overcloaking occurs at a very, very young age and remains for the rest of the person's life often. And there are many people, even it's happening now, you notice it happening now here in Australia even, where people are termed walk-ins. You've heard of that term? Some of you may have heard that term, where people, all of a sudden their life just changes. Like, they are one person one moment, and in each case there is a common factor, which where this happens. What happens is they step back emotionally from themselves because they don't want their life anymore. And a spirit who's in not a bad condition, usually it's in a first, second or third sphere condition, but in a higher condition, like, you know, not in the hells of the first sphere, overcloaks the person, and the spirit then lives their life through the person. No, it's not. It's not a form of reincarnation. All it is possession, spirit possession, really, in the end. And spirit possession happens all the time on this planet. And a lot of times for religious purposes. All of you have heard of St. Francis of Assisi, yes? No? St. Francis had the stigmata marks. You know of the stigmata marks? Where either they have them like nails driven through the palms or through the... Right? Where they, you know, they say it's the marks of Jesus dying on the cross, right? But anyway, he had those marks when he was on earth. He had blood coming out of his hands and also his feet, the marks of the stigmata. I talked to him about it, because you can talk to any spirit, right? So I talked to him about it, and his belief was so strong in having a life like I had in the first century. His belief was so strong about that, that what he did was attracted a spirit who was a Christian spirit who actually made the marks and made his flesh weep blood, right? And he had that happen for a period of a number of years, right? Now, when he passed into the spirit world, he knew straight away what had been happening, but he had not the means to tell anybody what had been happening. Does that make sense? Like, he couldn't come to somebody back on earth and say, actually, the stigmata marks were actually caused in me by a spirit because I wanted it to happen. Right, he couldn't say that to anyone because there wasn't any spirits people on earth developed enough to hear him say it. And so the stigmata mark still is looked upon as something quite spooky but good, you know, in many religious forms. But in reality, all it is a spirit working with your material body to create a mark that is a mirror of your own emotional condition. Yeah.
Sorry, we just go back to the Dalai Lama.
Yep.
We just saw a program on TV where there was three children that were picked as the Dalai Lama. Now, they had to go through certain tests and that to work out how could that occur? How would they have to pick out which is the right Dalai Lama?
What happens in the spirit world is this. There is a group of ex-Dalai Lamas, I suppose you could call them. They still view themselves to be Dalai Lamas. Of course, they all have different names and different identities. So if you can imagine them in the spirit world, so a heap of these guys, because the Dalai Lama can only be male, which is, of course, one of the emotional injuries, of course. Right, let's have a look. So we've got all these men in the spirit world who have previously been the Dalai Lama on earth. What they do to further their faith on earth is they look for people on earth children, I'm talking young children on earth, who are mediumistic. There's a whole set of criteria that these Dalai Lamas in the spirit world have about the people on earth. One of them, the criteria, is that they're mediumistic. They have to be easily given messages from the spirit world, right? Another criteria is they have to have a religious background, usually a Buddhist religious background, and so forth. Their parents have to be devout. There's a lot of different requirements on the parents as well as the child, right? And what they finish up doing is selecting one or two or three different children. Does that make sense? So there might be one child they select who's in one location of the country, another child they select in one location of the country. And then what they do is they influence the Dalai Lama on earth, or who's an old man now, to actually come to know these people, which they can easily do through their mediumistic connection with him. And they also influence a group of people on earth who are looking for the next Dalai Lama. And then what has happened is, of course, all the parents agree to this because their parents are very proud to have the next Dalai Lama in their family, right? And so what they do is they get those children and then put them through a series of tests, if you like, to determine which one of these ones will become the next Dalai Lama, or which one of them is actually, from their perspective, the reincarnation of the Dalai Lama, is how they would say it. In reality, these are just different people, and these are different people who have existed in the spirit world, who are just influencing people on earth, and they're doing it in order to further their faith. So if I can influence the next generation and the next generation and the next generation, that is one way I have of perpetuating the faith through a lineage, and also creating a lot of trust in that next Dalai Lama. Can you see if the next Dalai Lama has a lot of characteristics like I had when I was the Dalai Lama, can you see how that would then perpetuate the existence of the teaching of reincarnation, that it's actually a reincarnation of me? In reality, these Dalai Lamas all know that reincarnation is not the truth, right? And however, they don't believe it like that. What they believe is that it's a truth for those who are yet to develop. Do you see what I'm saying? So they sort of see reincarnation as a tool of development, and they feel that they are beyond that development now. And so they often don't, some of them do have teachings of reincarnation they still believe, although it's modified from the earth-based teachings of reincarnation. But that's what they do. And by the way, this happens not just in that faith. This happens in all sorts of faiths on the planet, where people are chosen to be the next, like, teacher or the next, you know, guru or whatever, and that happens constantly. Yeah. Well, say we have a break now, so you can all have a break and have something to eat and so forth, and if we maybe have about half an hour to an hour or whatever you feel like, and then we'll come back by about, say, 3:45. Well, I suppose in the break a few questions may have come up for you, so now's your opportunity to ask some of them if you wish to, and then we can move on with the presentation. So who would like to ask anything at this point? If we can have the mic there, sorry, and then we come down.
At what stage do, when people go pass over, at what stage are they classified as going to the light?
It's a common viewpoint that people on the New Age path generally have, is that send them to the light, send them to the light. The truth is that a spirit who passes over can only sort of go to the... There's quite a few parts to this answer, so let's go through them one by one. We've got the person who's just passed, so here they are. Let's say their condition is like a lower first sphere condition, which is like most of the people who pass. So most people who pass are in a lower first sphere condition. That means that the brightness of their own body is quite low. And when they initially pass, they're hanging around their own body, their own physical body. So they haven't yet moved to the spirit world. The spirit world, if you can think of it like this great big area, which is actually lighter than the Earth's atmosphere. So when you say to a person, go to the light, they're actually just going to a place that's actually brighter than the Earth's atmosphere itself. That's all. it doesn't mean that they are going to be permanently in that place. Because almost in all occasions, once a person makes the shift and understands they've actually passed, they then are attracted to a place of reception in the spirit world. And this place of reception is where lots of spirits congregate who welcome people who have passed. And it doesn't really matter what condition you're in, they'll welcome you for a period of time. Now, they welcome you until you recognise your own condition. So what they do, when I say welcome you, they keep you in this place until there's a recognition of your own condition. When you recognise your own condition, that's when you are automatically attracted to your actual location of living in the spirit world. And that location of living may actually be darker than the Earth's atmosphere. Right? So a lot of times spirits who are told, seek out the light, say in response to a person, how do I seek out the light when all I've got around me is dark? Do you know what I mean? And what we would be better off doing is knowing what we're talking about when we say seek out the light. What we're really doing, saying, is we're saying seek out truth. We're saying seek out like higher degrees of love. And the people who are lighter, the people who are in more of a condition of love, are going to be brighter. So if the person seeks out another person who is in a brighter condition than themselves, they will be led to that new condition if they listen to the person. So that's a far better thing to say to them. The actual atmosphere of the spirit world, though, from a spirit's perspective, is brighter than the atmosphere of the earth condition. And so when we say seek the light, you know, it can assist them in that they are looking up and saying and seeing that actually there is a place brighter than the earth, but it doesn't actually tell them anything unless you explain to them what's really going on. And what's really going on is in the first sphere, you've got all these different spheres in the spirit world, or dimensions if you like, and in the first sphere there's literally thousands of layers. And in the lowest layer it's very dark, in the highest layer it's very light. And when the person recognises their own true soul condition, that's when they'll be attracted to one of those locations. And the location they live in will be a mirror of their own condition, no matter what location they first pass into in the spirit world. To give you an example, you've heard of Judas, the man who betrayed me, right? When he passed, He hung himself, and when he passed, he first passed and he went into this place of reception. And some very lovely spirits who are high spirits welcomed him, and he stayed in that location for about 3 weeks of earth time. So for about 3 weeks he stayed in this location. And then after a while, he was pretty immersed in his own emotions during that time, right? But after a while he saw that almost every person who he saw coming into that location, other than the spirits who were helping him, they were all ugly. Every single one of them was ugly. And then it dawned upon him that if he looked in the mirror, he may look ugly. Right? He looked in the mirror and saw his own, like, ugly condition, which was the result of his betrayal and his own suicide. And what happened then is the spirit came to him and said, now we can take you to your real home. And they took him to the place that his soul condition mirrored. Now, the place that his soul condition mirrored at the time, and by the way, Judas is now a celestial spirit, so he's progressed through these spheres, so he's no longer in this place. But at the time, they took him to a place that, if you could picture, like, if you could picture standing on the hill up at Yungala, right, looking down that valley, you know, the looking the valley towards Mackay, and then just picture everything going dead, like totally dead and black, like a fire has been through it. If you just imagine that, that's the place he lived in, like a fire had been everywhere. And he lived in this squalor for quite some time while he worked through some emotions. So that was his real condition. Now, if you told him in that condition, go to the light, there's nothing he could have done about his condition except feel his emotional causal reasons as to why he was there. That would have got him out of that place. But if you told him to go to the light and he was earthbound, then it would have made sense to him. So it just depends on where the spirit is as to whether going to the light is going to make sense to them or not. Does that make sense to you? Yeah? We had another question. Hasn't asked the question, so go on, brave. Yeah, be brave. That's it.
When you pass over, if you pass over at 48, do you stay at that age?
The initial instant you pass over, your spirit body will not necessarily look the age that you currently look. A lot of times it will look older, to be frank, right? Because most of the time we've got a lot of unhealed emotions in us, and those unhealed emotions cause us to look quite bad in our spirit body, and our spirit body's looks cause our physical body's looks to deteriorate. So it depends on what I've done on the earth as to what I'm going to look like when I first arrive in the spirit world. Does that make sense? So let's say on earth I've been a murderer and a rapist and a serial killer, and that's what I've been on earth, but I'm a handsome looking man. When I pass over, the instant I pass over, I will actually look so extremely ugly that most of you couldn't even bear to look at him. Alright? He will look like he's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years old, and totally shriveled up and in a terrible disfigured condition because of what he created while he was on earth. And that's reflected in his spirit body. However, let's say on the earth I practiced giving a lot and I did a lot for other people, not out of an impure motive, but I did it because I loved people and I just wanted to help them. And I gave away things like from myself to them and didn't expect anything back. In other words, I was practicing a lot of love while I was on earth. If I pass over, my spirit body will look younger often than my years. So I might look, if I pass when I was 50, I might look 30, 35. Does that make sense? And then from then on, it depends on what you do and what emotions you release in the spirit world as to how rapidly you become young again. So every single person in the sixth sphere or above looks around 25 years of age. Right? Aside from the children who haven't wanted to grow up. And there's many of those. My own grandchildren from the first century are still around 14 years of age. That's what they look like. Right? So you don't have to grow up in the spirit world. It's just depending on what you want to feel and what emotions you want to experience as to what you look like. But for the majority of people, they pass over in pretty close condition to what their physical body is in. And then, depending on the emotions that I deal with, will depend on how rapidly that changes. So by the time I get to the second sphere, I'll probably look about in my 40s or late 30s. By the time I get to the third sphere, I look about in my sort of early to mid 30s. It doesn't matter what age I look like, I passed, this is what I'll look like as I progress. By the time I get to the fifth sphere, I'll look around sort of in about 30, high 20s. By the time I get to the sixth sphere, I'll look around mid 20s. Right? And after that, what changes is more things like the brightness and the condition of your body rather than its age. And so you'll meet in the future, you'll meet people that are 50,000 years old and they'll look 25. And you'll think, when you first pass, it's very disconcerting, right? Because how many of you view a 25-year-old as having much experience at the moment? Right, see, a lot of times we get older and we start thinking, oh, 25-year-old, they haven't got much experience, you know. Well, you look at a 25-year-old in the spirit world and you won't be able to tell how much experience he's had, right? Because he may actually be 50,000 years old. And you don't know because you're just looking at physical appearance. So after a while in the spirit world, you forget about physical appearance and you start feeling the soul qualities of the person. Here on earth, it's often very different. We look firstly at the physical appearance and then we try to work through what the soul qualities are. And this is why often spirits, when they materialise or they actually portray themselves in picture form or dream form to you, they often portray themselves to be old age in order for you to respect them, because they're working with your emotional injury of not respecting anyone who's younger than you. Does that make sense? And that's just an emotional injury we need to work through. Because in the end, in the spirit world, there's millions and millions and millions of spirits who look younger than you but have vastly more experience than what you have. So, yep.
Even when you pass over at 14 and you're progressing, do you still stay at 14 or do you...
As far as 14 years of age, like a teenager, it depends. When I'm a child, it depends on whether I want to grow, and I want to grow my body and look older, as to whether I do or not. So there are many children who have passed over 20 years ago who still look 6 years of age. I've talked to some spirits who, quite about a year or so ago, who passed with cancer, with leukemia, but still look the same age as when they passed 20 years ago. Whereas on Earth, if we looked at them, they'd be like 25 or 26, but they still look like they're 6. But don't forget, they have all the experience of the 26-year-old, plus more, because these ones are on the Divine Love Path, so they've even got more experience. So these ones would have far more experience than the majority of you in the audience, and yet, to look at them, they look like a 6-year-old to talk to. So don't judge spirits by their appearance, I suppose, is the general rule. Yeah? If we get a microphone, let's wait for a microphone.
I was just wondering if it could be a little bit different. When my mother died, I actually saw her. She was in her 50s when she died, but at her funeral she was actually sitting up on a pillar and she was 19 years of age. And she was checking out how, like, people...
That's completely different. That is a spirit projecting at you an image of themselves. That is like a vision. It's like me taking a recording of you when you're 20 and playing it back to you even though you're older. Right? Now, spirits do that all the time. And so how a spirit portrays themselves to you isn't necessarily how they're going to look if you met them in the spirit world. Right? They're often portraying themselves to you in a certain state to engender certain emotions inside of you.
It was only for that short period of time, because then I was told she was actually being taken away to help with her processing of emotions that I didn't understand at the time, but I do now.
Yeah. So what they were projecting at you in terms of pictures was different to her actual condition at the time. And that's a very different thing than if you'd met them in the spirit world. If you met your mum in the spirit world, as soon as she'd passed, you would have seen her true condition reflected in her spirit body. Yeah. And that's totally different than me projecting an image to you of what I look like. And by the way, a spirit can project an image to you that isn't the same as what they really are. Right? Just like I can take a picture of you 25 years ago and project it back at you now. Or I could take a picture of me 25 years ago and project it back at you now. Does that make sense? So don't assume automatically that if a person looks young, that actually they're developed with their soul condition, because a spirit can project an image at you that is actually not a mirror of their true condition.
I think that was only just for us really to know who it was at the funeral.
Yes, certainly. And they do it for all different emotional reasons. Some of it's to trigger certain emotions in ourselves of what we remember. Sometimes it's to help us with our grief. There's lots of different emotional reasons why a person may do that. And the key is, once you understand that, you can seal a lot of the projections. So some of my friends from the first century will project at you an older man, when in reality they're 20, look like 20 years of age. But they project at you an older man because if they come to you looking 20, you might not listen to them, and instead you might get sexually attracted to them. You know what I mean? And that might be an injury you have. You know? And so they don't want that. So what they do is they project the image of you being older so that they can actually have a different interaction with you than the one that they know they would have if you could see them in their true state. So, and that's not the same as misrepresenting their true emotional condition, because no spirit on the Divine Love Path would ever misrepresent their emotional condition. So if you understand that most of the time spirits coming to you are coming to you, if they're in higher condition, they're coming to you with a goal to help you with your emotional processing, in every case. Yeah. And that's what they were trying to do with your mum's funeral. Yeah.
Well, my question was basically along the same line.
Yeah.
But also thinking that the spirit will manifest itself in a way that you can actually recognize him.
Yes.
So, and I also believe that not only that same spirit can manifest on this earth.
If you hold the mic a bit closer, so you're
yeah. Yeah. Go on. Not only spirit can manifest on this earth, but my belief is that they can also manifest in other planes of existence as well.
Yes,
is that correct? Under a different.
That's very dependent on their soul condition, though. You see, if yes. their soul condition is such that they can't go anywhere near the second sphere, then they can only be in the earth and the first dimension wherever they manifest.
Right.
Right? But if their soul condition is that they could be in the second sphere, then they can go second sphere, first sphere, or the earth and manifest anywhere there. If their soul condition is the third sphere, it's the same. It just depends on where their soul condition is. You can't mm-hmm. manifest higher than your soul condition. You can only manifest, you can project images of higher than your soul condition, but you can't manifest bodily higher than your own soul condition.
Okay, so you're saying that only the higher sphere spirits are able to manifest in the way that they wish to. By
yes, yes.
Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
And the higher your condition, the more you can exercise exactly what your desires are, because the more your desires are harmonious with love.
Mm-hmm.
So the higher condition I'm in more harmony with divine love, and so therefore I have more freedom associated with that harmony.
Mm-hmm.
The lower condition I'm in, the less freedom I have because I'm breaking a lot more of God's laws, and so I have therefore less freedom to do
and less,
what...
And less creativity. Less.
And less creativity and less, yeah, less everything actually.
Right.
Less power,
yeah.
All sorts of things.
Yeah.
And so what happens a lot of the times is groups of spirits in the lower spheres get together and manifest. So what they do is let's say none of us between us could create a body projection on the earth.
Yeah.
Right? So what we'd all do is we'd all get together because we had a common goal and do it one body, and it's taken 100 of us to supply all the energy for it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So a lot of times that also happens. A lot of these lizard projections that the Earth's getting now, you've heard of them? Like, a lot of them are manifested by groups of thousands of spirits who are in very poor condition, manifesting a creature that can scare somebody on Earth or feel powerful to somebody on Earth. But in reality, it takes the energy of thousands of spirits to do it. Because most of those spirits are in such poor condition they can't even keep their own body together, let alone make a body that somebody can look at. Right? So the problem for many of us on Earth is that we judge things just by appearances. And the problem with that is that in the spirit world, many spirits know that we judge things just by appearances. And so what they then do is give us appearance that we then make a judgment of, knowing that we're going to make that judgment, when in reality, if we could feel the emotion of the spirit, we would not make the same judgment. And this is why it's so important for you to develop yourself emotionally, because then you can tell the truth about a situation.
So why would the spirit world just do or project the lizard to scare people? Is that just
it's about power, control. You know, there's a lot of spirits in the spirit world in very dark places who have heavy controlling influence on the political scene of this earth, and they still are manifesting themselves in such a way that the people, the politicians and so forth, who are guided by spirits, are heavily influenced by those projections of power. When in reality, the spirits themselves have very little power, and if you could recognise the power they had, they wouldn't even have the power to even generate the image. So, unfortunately, a lot of wicked spirits, through their emotions, control a lot of what goes on the earth through these projections that they have towards people in power. Yeah. So they get something out of it emotionally, in other words. Their emotion is they want to
continue. And they have no wish, these spirits, to progress?
No. They have their only desire is to control. And evilly so. Like, they're very wicked. If you could picture, has any of you seen a picture of Dante's hell? You know, fire and brimstone, I don't know, he drew some pictures anyway, he's a fellow from, I forget which century now, but he drew some pictures of hell, and he had this evil devil looking person with horns and pitchfork and torturing. He had all these different things of torturing people and whatever. If you could picture that person as a person some of the most wicked people in the spirit world are that wicked. Like, they are very, very wicked in their desires, and their desires for people on earth are very wicked as well.
Is that where the devil came from?
That's where the devil came from in terms of her philosophy, is that there are many spirits in the spirit world that are so malicious and evil that many of you would view them as worse than the devil in terms of conception. Like, to give you an example, there's groups of spirits in the spirit world that all they want to do is see a child raped and mutilated, like cut up. That's all they want. That's all that they want. And this is why some people on earth finish up doing it, because there are whole groups of spirits influencing them to actually do those kind of acts. And that's all they want. So there are whole groups of spirits in this very, very evil place. Now, what protects us from them is our guides, our guardians, and also our own soul condition. Right? And this is why a lot of mediums, you know, the old time, well, before you heard the divine truth, you would have heard surround yourself with a light and all that stuff, right? And the reason why all that's being said is because there has been historically a recognition that there are many evil spirits in the spirit world who would like to harm you, and if you start opening up as a medium, that you could be influenced by these spirits. The key to remember with all influence is that all influence is based on our emotional condition. So they can only influence me to murder somebody else if I also have an emotion of rage towards somebody else that's murderous. Does that make sense? They can only influence me to rape somebody else if I also have an emotion inside of me that I'm willing to, or that I often think about and feel about raping somebody else. They can only influence me if I also have a similar, what you would call, sympathetic emotion. And that probably leads into the subject that, you know, I want to discuss next, is how there's really four different types of spirits that influence our emotional condition. So we'll talk about that in detail.
Okay, so obviously every one of us takes birth in a different family under different circumstances, and we all have different effects of that.
Yep.
And that doesn't seem to be very equal.
Yep.
Or just. So is that being influenced by spirit, or how does that work? You know, like, why is that to start with, you know?
Well, remember that God creates all systems perfect, and then what man does generally when we follow our own will is that we just go ahead and stuff them up, right? To be blunt. So what happens most of the time is that all the time God creates these perfect systems. One of the perfect systems is that in the beginning God created a system that enabled every single person to have an access to truth and an access to divine love. But what happened was that after a few generations, people stuffed all of that up through following their own desires and walking away from God, really. And the problem is on the planet is we're still reaping the results of this general exodus from walking away from God's truths. Now that creates seeming equalities on the earth itself. In the spirit world, though, things are often very much fixed up with regard to equality, because God's laws are enforced more permanently and accurately in the spirit world than they are here on earth. There's a good reason why God's done that. God has given you this life on earth in order for you to feel your emotional condition and act upon it without any seeming consequences. Right? The beauty of that is that if you act in harmony with love, the consequences for you are going to be immensely beautiful and joyful. The difficulty with that is if you act in harmony with, you know, untruth, or you act in an evil manner, out of harmony with love, in other words, harmonious with fear, the consequences are going to be very negative. And you won't necessarily see the consequences fully until you pass. But once you do pass, you will definitely come to terms with the full consequences of every choice that you've ever made on the planet. So that means that if I'm born into a nice, wealthy family, and then because of that wealth, I then take advantage of other people and, you know, become even wealthier, I am actually degrading my own soul condition as this is occurring. Now, when I pass, I will actually be in worse condition than the persons I harmed. right? And there's an evening up, if you like, of everything. Now, that evening up begins the moment that you do the act that's actually out of harmony with love. But the problem on the earth is we're so desensitive to our own emotional condition that we don't notice when we've done it. That's our issue. You see, if... I'll give you an example. How many of... no, I won't ask that embarrassing question. Eating meat, right? Let's look at that as an example. Did you know, or even drinking milk, did you know what happens on earth to give you your milk? Like, really know? Really, have you really felt about it? Let's look at what actually happens. A mother, right, there's a cow, and by the way, a cow has feelings, right? Like, you stab a cow with a knife and you'll see whether it has feelings or not. It experiences pain, right? You can also see when one experiences pleasure, right? So it does experience pain and pleasure, maybe on a much more simple level than we do, but it still does. You stab a cow and you'll notice it. Well, anyway, what they do is they make this cow, by artificially inseminating it, have a calf. You know what the racks are called where they do this? They're called rape racks. They're called rape racks for a reason, because that's what they basically do. They rape the cow by pushing a human fist into its uterus and implant seed for them to calve, right? Now, we are people doing this to animals, right? Now, let's go further with this. The animal gets born. The instant the animal is born, it's taken away from its mother. If it's a male animal, usually it's killed there and then, and many times fed back to its mother. This is where mad cow diseases come from. Many of the animals that we are normal vegetarian eaters are actually being fed meat, right, in order to produce more. They are also then pumped full of hormones in order to keep them milking for longer than a normal period. And normally with a calf, they would normally feed the calf, I think it was around 30 pounds of milk a day or something like that. But they're demanded to produce 120 pounds of milk for a milking machine. Now, just think about that for a moment. We're people, and we think that drinking milk's fine, right? Under these circumstances. But who of us would ever approve of somebody getting raped, having the calf or the child killed and fed back to the person that was raped, right? And actually feel... How many of us have actually felt about all of this? Really felt about it morally? Can you see that most of us haven't? Like, how many of you have felt about it morally? Most of us haven't. All right, so why don't we? Because if we feel about it, we couldn't do it. Can you see that? Like, could you do that? Could you get a cow, artificially inseminate it with your fist after you've got some sperm from a bull, right? Then when a straight newborn calf slit its throat, munch it all up in a muncher and feed it back to its own mother, could you do that? Well, this is what's happening on your behalf when you go and get milk. Now, you could say when you go and get milk that's not organic, but let's deal with that separately. But this is what's happening on our behalf. Now, I'm being frank with you, because most of the time we totally ignore what's actually happening on our behalf in order for us to get what we want. Right? And we like that, because what that does is it places distance between our own desire for milk and what's actually happening to supply us with that milk. Can you see that? It places emotional distance between it. When there's emotional distance, it means I don't have to feel about it. I actually allow myself then to get away with the truth, to get away with what's actually happening. Now, did you know also that it takes 20 times more energy to produce a pound of meat or a kilogram of meat than it does to produce a kilogram of grain? And did you also know that 95% of the entire world's crop every single year is actually fed to animals, not fed to humans? Now you imagine if just 5% of that crop was fed to humans, you would have no starvation on this planet at all. But instead, because of our desire for meat, it's taken away from those humans and fed to animals so that some of us can have animals to eat when others have got nothing to eat. Now, these are the blunt facts about our life. We don't want to face them. The reason why we don't want to face them is because it distances us emotionally from the axe. And the thing is, in the spirit world, we are all going to come face to face with the emotions involved in what we've acted upon. On earth, we can get away with it. All right? And at some point, we need to come to see what we're doing. Here on earth, if we can see what we're doing before we pass, you'll find you'll pass in a much better condition than if you avoid what you're doing on earth before you pass. Does that make sense? And my suggestion is, allow yourself to investigate fully what is really happening all around you. And it will change your life, and it will change what you do into being more in harmony with love. But oftentimes what we do is we're addicted to a certain substance, in this case, say, milk or meat or cheese or eggs or whatever the substance is that we like. And what we do is we don't care about what it takes to give us that thing. And until we learn to care, not only just for people, but also for the animals and everything else, we are yet to really start practicing love completely in our lives. So we need to care about all these things. Now, why I brought that up is because when you pass into the spirit world, you come face to face with all these things that you've done even by proxy. Do you know what I mean by proxy? I mean that you got somebody else to do it for you so that you could avoid the emotion of doing it yourself. Right? Now, how many of us have actually got a chicken, wrung its neck, cut its head off, plucked it, and then ate it lately? I know many of you would have done it 10 years ago, maybe 20 years ago or something like that. It's pretty rare for many of us nowadays to do it, isn't it? Because we rely on other people to do it for us. Why? Because it's such a terrible thing to do that we don't want to connect emotionally to doing it, so we get someone else to do it instead. When you go to the slaughterhouses, a lot of times they are still skinning and disemboweling the animals while they're still alive. Right? Now, if you knew that, would that affect what you eat? Yes. So what do? We blank all that out. We don't even go there, right? We don't even go there emotionally or anything. We don't even investigate. And yet on the internet, there's hundreds of sites that will tell you the truth about what actually happens. And yet we don't even investigate those. Why? Because we want to remain emotionally distant from the act. Because once we connect emotionally to the act, we realise we can't do it. And that's the power of love, in a way. Once you connect, and this is why your emotions are so important, right? When you connect emotionally to what we're doing, you will no longer be able to do the things that are disharmonious with love. You'll automatically want to love. And when you connect emotionally to a lot of these things, you won't be able to do it. And it's the same for the spirits that are here with us today. When they connect emotionally to what's really going on, a lot of times they won't be able to do it. One time I was talking to one lady. Her 5-year-old daughter had leukemia. She's had leukemia from the age of 2, she had. When she was 5, the daughter no longer was automatically cured. No idea why. And I talked to the spirit who caused her leukemia. The spirit was her grandmother who died of cancer. So the spirit, this person on earth, this child, had a great-grandmother who died of cancer, and then because of her emotional condition connected with this child, and because of the feelings inside the grandmother and the projections she had at the child, she actually caused the child to develop leukemia. And it wasn't until that she realised what she was doing that she stopped projecting at the child, and the child instantly, when I say instantly, over a period of a few weeks, just had her leukemia disappear. Now, you imagine if every spirit in the spirit world who was doing that, causing child onset cancers, stopped connecting to those children, we would have no child onset cancer on this planet. Right? Now, isn't that an amazing thing? When you think about it, how much of our resources goes into that? Huge resources go into that. And yet all it needs is some spirits to know the truth of what they're doing. That's all it needs. Right? And of course some parents to know the truth of what's going on too, because they can talk to the spirits if they don't know. And this is the issue with truth. When we come to see truth, we actually finish up coming to see the truth about everything around us, and we have a large degree of being able to help people under those circumstances. Does that make sense? So that's the key thing to remember.
Just, you know, with this new age religions, we are sort of taught that we have to cleanse our home with all sorts of things, you know, like sprinkling starter on the house and all that. Is that relevant? Is that relevant?
Well, if you were a spirit who was in a really angry, negative place, would you care about a smudge stick? Really? Like I've said to you, and this is the truth, that people who have passed are just the same people they were before they passed. Now, if I walked into a room and smelled a smudge stick, I'd go, do I want to be here? Don't I want to be here? I still want to be here, so I'll stay around. Do you know what I mean? Would you be influenced by the smudge stick if you were a spirit? So what starts all these beliefs? What starts all these beliefs is a huge focus by most of the, you know, New Age world on what we call the mystical things about spirits. There is nothing mystical about spirit world or spirits. Nothing mystical at all, right? All we need to do is come to understand the properties of material and the properties of emotions, and we'll understand everything that's going on in the end. So every time I feel a desire to follow one of these mystical traditions, all I'm doing is falling into a pattern of some spirit who decided that that was a good thing to do, and so there's a whole generation of them deciding that now. That's all I'm doing. It doesn't actually do anything for me. Do you think a wicked spirit is going to care that you're sitting down saying, only let the good spirit come to me? Of course he's not. If he can connect to you emotionally, he's going to connect to you, and he doesn't care. Right? Do you think an evil person on earth cares? Do you think an evil person on earth cares about your property? They don't care. You tell them to stay away from your property, you know, please stay away from your property. Is the person going to say, what, please, what? They've got no idea what please means, right? They're not going to stay away. They're only going to stay away based on soul condition. And this is where it always gets back to soul condition. It's your soul condition that protects you, or it's your soul condition that does not allow for your protection. So the best thing I can do any time is change my soul condition. The way God made the entire structure is, if I change my soul condition to be harmonious with love, there is far less damaging things that can happen to me than if my soul condition has all these other things going on. And we've seen this happen over and over again where, you know, people have been harmed in certain ways, but if their soul condition was different, they could not have got harmed in those particular ways. Just recently, I have a friend who had been raped. But her rape was caused by her projection, and when I say cause, I don't mean that she's to blame for somebody, a man, raping her. But what I am saying is she projected sexually at this man. She kissed him, allowed him to touch her, and then when it got too far for her to handle, and the whole reason why she did it was because she wanted fame and power, but, right, that's the only reason why she did it. She wanted this man to do something for her, so she started trading off sex with action and love. And then once that happened, it went too far, and then this man got influenced by some spirits, and before she knows, she's raped. Right? Now, if her soul condition was different, she would never even been with this man to have been raped in the first place. Now, I'm not saying the rape is her fault, because it's actually the man's fault who decides to harm somebody else's free will. Doesn't matter what the consequences are, that's his fault. But her condition, if it was different, if she didn't have this condition of, desire for sexual attention from an older man, this would never have occurred. Right? So this is where it gets down to, all right, every single event that happens to me is caused by a soul reason within me. And I need to allow myself to feel about that. Right? I need to allow myself to deal with that. Now, many of you ladies just now have had a projection at me about that particular statement that I made about the rape. Right? Yeah, many of you did. Because there is historically in many women this terrible emotion, and understandably so, many women historically have been harmed terribly through the act of sex, right? And I'm not saying that it's your fault that these things occurred. What I'm saying is that you can protect yourself from these things occurring by changing your soul condition. Does that make sense? Just like if I'm a male who's in a very, harsh environment, I can protect myself from other people harming me just by changing my soul condition. And what we need to do is come to trust that and see that, experiment with that in our lives and see how that works. Because most of the time we don't even trust that. We don't even believe that. So what we do is we act instead. You know, this is what the pill popping thing's all about, right? Why do I take some pills? Because I don't believe I can heal the soul emotional reason why I need the pill. Whatever the pill is. Right? Let's say it's vitamin B12 and I haven't got enough assimilated into my body. I had that problem, so I'd be taking vitamin B tablet 12 every day, right? And many of you have probably been in this state in the past, taking one every day. I took one every day for 14 years. That made somebody a lot of money, right? Anyway, what I started realising is that my body wasn't assimilating this vitamin. And there must be an emotional reason why. So I had to start looking at the emotional reasons why my body was not assimilating these vitamins. And once I started looking at that, boy, I opened a can of worms, there were so many different emotions affected by that one thing. But as I start working my way through them, my body doesn't need vitamin B12 anymore because it's already assimilating it from my diet now. Right? And I don't eat anything major different in that time, in the last 6 years in particular. Why? Because once you deal with your soul condition, things change. But see, most of the time we're not looking for things to do that way. What we want, and this is the trouble with our spirit interactions too, what we want is instant fixes, don't we? So, I've got a headache, what do? Grab for the Panadol or the aspirin or whatever. All right? Take one of those, bang, headache's gone. Isn't that wonderful? But the headache was telling you that you're suppressing grief about something that you were just close to getting to. It's actually, you just suppressed a soul condition change. And you need to ask with the microphone, because otherwise nothing gets recorded and I want it recorded.
AJ, I have to ask, how bad does it have to be? Because a few weeks ago I was actually put in hospital from a pain that I actually felt, and I kept saying, well, this emotion is mine. I asked to be shown the emotion and help and everything, but it just got so bad that I had to ring the ambulance.
Understand, whenever we are in pain, it's not because we want to know the emotion.
Okay.
It's because we don't want to know the emotion.
Okay.
So you would have been far better off saying, I don't want to know this emotion. Quick, let's get an ambulance.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Because the truth is, as the pain increases in its intensity, my body is telling me I don't want the emotion. So there's emotional blockage.
But I want to process the emotion.
No, you don't.
You're saying I don't want to.
You say to yourself you want to.
Okay.
But you're actually feeling, no, I don't.
Okay.
Go with that.
Okay, thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
That's a more truthful state than actually believing you want to and your pain increasing.
Okay.
If your pain's increasing, it's because you don't want to. Pain doesn't increase when you want to. Pain decreases when you want to. Does that make sense? So when my pain is increasing, my headache's getting worse, getting worse, getting worse, getting worse, right? I'm better off saying, I don't want to cry, than I am saying, please help me cry. The truth is that the headache is proof that I don't want to cry. Does that make sense to you? I'm better off saying the truth. Remember, the truth is always going to open you up emotionally. So what you say to yourself, I got a headache. I don't want to cry. Why don't I want to cry? That'd be a good question to ask. Why don't I want to cry? Oh, because if I cry, I'll look stupid. If I cry, you know, somebody's going to punish me. If I cry, my daddy's going to come along with a stick and make me, give me something to cry about. You know, all these different beliefs I have is the reason why I don't want to cry. But I've got the headache, and the headache is proof I don't want to cry. Right? If I've got the pain in my body, that's proof I don't want to feel it. So right at the moment, I got a pain right across here, right? Right across here, right around here. It's proof that I don't want to feel the cause. Because if I wanted to feel the cause, I'd be bawling right now and I wouldn't be feeling the pain. Does that make sense? So I can say to myself, I don't want to feel the cause. So what I'm saying to myself, I don't want to feel the cause. What am I afraid of? Why don't I want to feel the cause? It must be because I'm afraid of something. What am I afraid of? Can you see that? And that helps me find the blockage to feeling the cause. You see, remember with our emotions, and this applies to spirits as well, so it's a good question. So remember with our emotions, it's like we have our causal emotion down here, whatever that cause is. Usually it's grief, right? And then on top of the cause, we usually have a blocking emotion. Like fear, shame, guilt, lots of those kind of emotions are all blocking type emotions. Then on top of that, we often have a anger-based emotion, you know, right the way through to rage. So we could say rage is a part of that. And then we even go further in our emotional suppression as humans, and we go into total suppression of all of that. And we do that by exercising our intellect into total denial of everything that's going on inside of us. And when we get in that state, that's when we get severely depressed, like we feel numb to life, we can't really even feel like things are joyful or not joyful. We get, you know, very distracted with all of our life. And it's because in the end there are layers that we need to feel down into. Now, anything from there above will create pain. So when I'm afraid of dealing with an emotion, which I am right now afraid of dealing with one of my emotions, I am going to guaranteed be in pain. My pain is telling me that I don't want to feel the emotion. And so instead of telling myself, please help me feel the emotion, please help me feel the emotion, someone's put a seven of clubs up there and a king of... Anyway, interesting distraction from my emotion, right? I don't want to feel my emotion, I don't want to feel my emotion. And because of that suppression, I am now in pain. Now, if the pain increases, that's telling me my suppression is increasing. And if the pain increases a bit more, my suppression's even increasing a bit more now. Right? So I'm really trying to keep it down, really trying to keep it down. So the best question to ask is why? And usually the why encounters the blockage, which is usually the fear. The fear of whatever I'm afraid of doing. Why am I afraid of feeling this? Because feeling this, I'm probably going to be crying for a few weeks. You know, it's not very good to start crying now. It's the write-off of the whole weekend, and you know what I mean? So, you know, so I suppress it instead. So I don't really want to feel it. And once I get to the point where I'm fully allowing the feeling of it, all this back pain will, and, you know, pain around here for me will just disappear immediately. If I'm in pain, it's because I'm out of harmony with love. I'm in pain, I'm out of harmony with love. It's a really important thing to remember, spirit or mortal. I'm in pain, so I'm out of harmony with love. Now, I'm not saying here, a lot of people are not in very much pain in total suppression. I'm saying, you know, when you get starting to get into these areas, you're often in pain because you're not treating yourself lovingly, because I'm not allowing the causal emotion to flow. And instead of telling myself I want the causal emotion, I'm far better off telling myself the truth, which is I don't want my causal emotion. And ironically, many times after you say I don't want, and I'm allowed to not want my causal emotion, oh, there's some kind of reverse psychological thing in that, and oftentimes the emotion will flow. If your pain's increasing, then you know, then it means you're in denial. And I'd be looking for a doctor or someone else you know, if that's what you want to do. You know, what I do myself is I let myself sit in how much denial I'm in. And sometimes my denial's been quite extreme, so I've been in quite a lot of physical pain. But I just allow myself to sit in that. You don't have to do that, but at least tell yourself the truth. I don't want to feel the emotion. Yeah, but see that even now, you're not telling yourself the truth even there, right? The truth is that you were not looking at it. That's why the pain was increasing, right? That's the truth. So allow yourself to see that truth. You're allowed to not look at it. You're allowed to deny it altogether because you've got free will, right? God says you're allowed to do anything you want with this free will that God's given you. So you're allowed to deny this cause, but you are going to be in pain when you do it. And the pain is a proof of my denial, right? And if I allow myself to feel my pain, I say, oh, there it goes again, I'm denying again, you know, I'm denying again. Oh, my back's a bit sore. Yep, denying again, you know, like, here I go again, what am I denying? And the question really is more important is not what am I denying, but why am I denying? Why am I suppressing? We go up the back with the mic. Thanks, Denise. And right up the back, sorry. And then we come down the front. Come down.
Do you have a comment on disorders or diseases that are genetic? Say, for instance, arthritis that you can trace back 6 generations in a family.
I'll talk all about that tomorrow.
Yeah?
Yep. All of the diseases and all of those things I'll talk about tomorrow. Today what I want to focus on is the reason for them, and tomorrow what I want to focus on is the emotion behind them.
Because my experience has been, I'm actually a practitioner, and my experience has been with clients that I completely agree with what you said with that. I found that. But some of the stuff is like concrete. Trying to chip through it or break through it.
Yep.
If it's not like that, it's easy to get rid of.
Well, the truth is that everything that harms you the most is going to be like concrete.
Yeah.
And the truth also is that if it's like concrete, I have a desire inside of myself to avoid it. And one of the first things I would be looking at with any person I was helping is why they have a desire to avoid it. And in the end, all desires to avoid come from fears that need to be addressed.
But what I've actually dealt with as well is family denial that goes back generations upon generations, so that everyone's playing that game.
Yes.
And everyone's in the same playhouse. So.
Yes. Yeah. And the key is breaking through that family denial. That has to happen emotionally. So the truth also is that a lot of family denial is perpetrated by spirit attraction. In other words, my great-grandfather is attracted to me, keep me in denial. My grandfather is attracted to me to keep me in denial. And they all have a plan going on in the spirit world. We've got to stop him from going from that place to another place. You know, this happens a lot in religions.
So as it is in heaven, as in earth.
Yeah,
on earth.
Yeah. So you have all these spirits from the spirit world projecting at this next generation. Don't you go there, don't you go there, don't you go there. And so the person is less inclined to go there, less inclined to deal with the emotion that actually causes their illness. And in the end, a lot of families generationally die from the same illness for that reason. Because they all have the same emotional denial that they perpetrate through each generation, and that just connects to other spirits who perpetrate that same denial. And we'll talk about all that tomorrow and how that works.
So they do it alive or dead.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Remember, there's no such thing as dead. They're all alive, they're just in a different place, that's all. Yeah.
I was wondering, how would we go about conditioning our soul or spirit to connect with spirits or to enhance our psychic abilities? Is there a way of going about this?
There is, but I don't really want to cover it in today's talk.
Okay.
And there is a talk that I've given called called The Laws of Spirit Communication.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a listen to that talk, it's downloadable as an MP3. And if you're interested in developing your mediumship, I've done a heap of lessons that are also downloadable on the net. They're called Spirit Relationships, Mediumship and Healing, Session 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so forth.
Okay.
Download those and have a listen to those.
And that's from your website you typed up on the...
That's on the website, yes.
Okay. And right. Also you said we're mortals and spirit, and then you said spirits. Are spirits immortal?
No.
Okay.
Often I refer to people on Earth as mortal,
yeah,
so that you know the difference between the two people I'm talking about. In my mind... A spirit person and you are identical.
Yeah.
Right? But how do I help an audience tell the difference between somebody who's alive on Earth without saying somebody who's alive on Earth every time I talk about them, and compared to saying someone who's alive in the spirit world? Mm-hmm. So often I'll call somebody who's alive in the spirit world a spirit, and often I'll call somebody who's alive on Earth a mortal, just so that you can differentiate between the two. Does that make sense? And immortality only comes with one thing. And that is divine love entering the soul. So once you enter, you receive divine love to the point of atonement with God, which occurs at the eighth dimensional space, you are now immortal. In other words, you can now never die, because there's divine love in your soul, and to destroy you, or for you to be destroyed, would mean that God's love would have to be destroyed, which will never occur. However, it is not known whether spirits who have not received divine love might not pass. And that's something that spirits in the spirit world are still trying to work out what will happen,
yeah,
to spirits who have not received divine love. Because the truth is, the way God's designed all of the universe is that everything is always changing. Things are changing from one thing into another and growing all the time. And if we don't continue growing, which is what the spirits in the sixth sphere are not doing, they're not continuing to grow, many of them, what happens? And at the moment, nobody's lived long enough to know what would happen in that state.
Yep. Thank you for your answer.
Yeah. Questions? Yep.
Yeah, just one. With your soul condition,
yep,
that's quite obviously at this level where we are now, it's our choice to do something about it.
Yep.
Okay, so how do we help children that aren't in a situation to make a decision for themselves about improving their soul condition?
The best way to help any child is to change your own condition. Because children's condition is, yep, a result of the denial of our own condition.
Right, so basically our job then is, well, not our job, but to change the parent, the way they pass on their soul condition to their child is the way to go.
Yep.
Example.
Yes, always.
And so, and from, I'm looking at a helping type thing, you know, to,
yep,
help so helping the parent at this point will help the future generations of children get in touch with their soul condition. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Children are always more in touch with their soul condition than parents are anyway.
Yeah, I know, but they don't... They're manipulated by the parents' direction of soul condition. Is that correct?
Spot on.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
So if we can help the parents, then that certainly is going to immediately impact upon the benefit for the child.
Yeah.
You can also help the child, of course, depending on their level of awareness. So
yeah,
if the child's a teenager, that's a lot different than if the child's 2 years of age.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about young children then, because that's really where it starts, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay,
and
thanks. Yeah.
The more we can help the parent to stop projecting their emotion and owning their own emotions and also owning their own beliefs and also relieving them of beliefs that are disharmonious with love, the child just grows out of immensely.
Yeah.
And often a child by the time they're 6 or 7 years of age can be way ahead of a parent.
That's right, yeah.
If they have that freedom.
Okay,
yeah.
Thanks. Yep.
Yeah. Anyone else?
We have talked about how we can get bad influences from the spirits. What's the situation about spirits helping us in working with emotional work and all that?
You are always surrounded by spirits who are good, trying to also assist you, right? And in particular, it depends on your desire. And this is what I wanted to talk about next, the level of spirit influence and what kind of spirits influence us generally. The problem is that with many of the spirits who are trying to influence us for good, there's often 25 others trying to influence us you know, down the wrong path. And often our own emotions as well are very opposite to what the spirit trying to influence us for good would like to do. Now you see this happen so much where somebody gets drawn by their law of attraction into an event that is really good to go to. Like, how many of you have gone to Dr. Wayne Dyer, a discussion by Dr. Wayne Dyer, for instance? Many of you? Just two, right? Three? Okay. How did you find her? He was really good. He's really good, isn't he? Like, he just has such a positive attitude, lovely speaking manner. He's well polished in his presentations, a lot more polished than I am. And so it's just wonderful being there in his company and feeling his emotion and so forth. And a lot of the things he talks about are spirit related or intention related, quite powerful things to talk about. Now, many of us would have looked at one of his ads in the paper, which is a law of attraction event. Right? We look at the ad in the paper and we decide, no, I don't want to go. It costs, oh yeah, $120. No, no, it's too expensive. What just happened? What just happened is I sacrificed my soul for $120. And I've got an emotional reason why I did that. Right? Because if you went to, say, his power of intention talk, you would have just like, it would just help a lot of things change in your life in terms of setting your intention. But a lot of times what happens is we're led to make a choice. God is giving us choice after choice after choice after choice after choice in our life. And you know what we do with it? We're influenced by our negative emotional condition into not following the choice. So for example, when you make a switch from having a cost on your soul to thinking your soul is priceless, do you think you're going to worry about the money you spend in developing your soul? Not anymore, will you? Right? You don't care how much money happens. Now, fortunately, the truth is free, so you don't even have to spend very much money. But if the truth wasn't free, at the end of the day, who cares whether it costs you 100 grand to learn a truth? As long as it benefits your soul. You know, if you spend you spend 5 years of your working life paying off for that truth, isn't that worth not ever finding out that truth from a soul perspective? See, when you have that soul focus, you'll go, oh, okay, money is not important here. I need to work my way through why I haven't got the money or whatever, and you'll work through things emotionally. You see, most of the time what's going on is we're offered choice after choice after choice, particularly those of us in the Western world. We have so many choices available to us, and we still don't take them because of emotional injuries. We don't trust. We're worried about what's going to happen. We're worried about what our friends are going to think. We're worried about what our family's going to think. We're worried about what it's going to look like to everybody. We're worried about the day we have to take off of work. We're worried about, you know what I mean? Like, there's just so many things that cause us to sacrifice our own soul. But if I have a focus on developing my own soul, I won't do that. And this is where we need to look at our spirit interactions a lot, because the malevolent spirits around us are going to hook into every one of those fears. You know, the no money, the no this, the no that, you know, they're going to hook into all of those fears, the malevolent spirits, and they'll influence you to not go to something that will benefit you through one of those emotions. The benevolent spirits, the spirits who want to help you, they're going, yeah, go for it, yeah, go for it, yeah, go for it. You imagine you've got a cheer squad up there, right? And I'm going, yeah, go for it, yeah, go for it. And, oh, no, it's that damn money thing he's got problem again, you know, like, that causes him to not go for it. And they go, I wish we could help him deal with that money thing. How can we help him deal with that money thing? And they'll go through. They may even bring, you know, the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad to you, or some other thing about money to help you deal with the money thing, right? To help you work through that. And then the next spiritual thing that comes up, and they're going, yeah, go for it, yeah, go for it. Oh, again, it's the money thing. You know, like, if you imagine being a guide, it can be sometimes quite frustrating. Because a lot of the times what's happening is we're making choices disharmonious with love of ourselves because of the emotions we're unwilling to release. And we need to be willing to release them to change. So when it comes to connecting with benevolent spirits or spirits who are in your favour, wanting to do things that help you truly, the key is following pure desires harmonious with love. Every time you have a desire that's pure and harmonious with love, always follow it. Right? Doesn't matter what it costs you. Doesn't matter what sacrifice you need to make to have it. Go ahead and follow it. Whenever you sacrifice it, now you're easily manipulated by spirits who are not harmonious with love. So in other words, whenever you act in harmony with fear, now you're easily manipulated by your fear into doing things that are not going to be for your soul's development or progression. So what kind of fears are there? All types of fears that I've already mentioned. Fears about pleasing others, fears about money, fears about, you know, even just things like, will I have enough time? Every time I list something like that in my mind, I've got to see my soul like on a scale. So imagine for a moment, how many years has most of you been looking for truth? Like all your life, right? Many of us, haven't we? 40, 50, some of us 70 years, whatever. So imagine that. We've got 70 year search for truth. So 70 years. And you know, half the time of that time I've been looking, so if we're 70, half of that time, probably even more, a lot more than half of that time, the majority of that time, we've actually been responding to emotions that stop us from finding truth. Isn't that sad? That's really sad, I feel. What we need to do instead is we need to see our soul, and this applies to spirit friends as well who are here, we need to see our soul like, put our soul on a pair of scales, right? You imagine a pair of scales. Right. So here's the scales. What are you going to value your soul at? Is your soul worth $1,000 to you? Sorry? Okay, if my soul, if I really value my soul is actually more important than anything else you could imagine. Except perhaps God and truth and love, you know, in terms of that, those orders. So what would I, what's my priority system? My soul is like way up there, isn't it? Higher than any. So let's look at money. So let's look at money for a moment. How much money is my soul worth? As much money as I could earn my entire life and more, isn't it? That's how much money my soul's worth. Priceless, really, isn't it? So do I treat it as if it's priceless? Am I treating my own development as if it's priceless? As if it's the most important thing in my entire life? That's the question I've got to ask myself, right? All right, how important is, like, let's think of our family, you know? So on this end, we have our dad, our mum, you know, our sister and brother, and their opinions, you know? Their opinions. That's on one side. How much is my soul worth? Is it worth more than their opinions? Of course it's worth more than their opinions, right? So it doesn't matter if my whole family hates me. As long as I'm finding the truth and finding and being in a state of more love, it doesn't matter, does it? In the end, my soul is worth more than that. And you see, when I start looking at it like that, my soul is worth more than everything else, that's when I'll start focusing on my own emotional development, my own development in love, really focusing on seeking the truth and spending a lot of my life focusing on that. Instead, for most of us, what we do is we say the words, yeah, it's more important, but then we don't reflect that in our day-to-day life. Can you see that? Like, let's look at it in terms of time. How much time? I'm saying my soul's priceless, but how much time do I spend on it? You know, five hours a day, 3 hours a day, 1 minute a day, you know, like, do I spend much time with it at all? Today, did I spend any time on it? Well, yeah, we're spending time on it here, but like yesterday, what was it like yesterday? What was your day like yesterday? Was it full of time that you spent developing your soul? Or was it just full of time doing things you didn't even want to do? Like, is that what was it like yesterday? Why am I doing anything I don't want to do anymore? What's going on there? I've obviously need to learn some soul lessons there. So allow yourself to start focusing on your soul as the primary importance. But don't do it in your head. Do it with your feelings. Really put your soul effort into it. Then you'll find all truths come to you. That's how God created it. And you think about it. Every time you've sincerely looked for truth, haven't you found some? Every time you've sincerely looked for it. Sooner or later you find some. It's only when we stop looking, or we tell ourselves we're looking when we're really not, or we're so distracted with other things that we finish up not really finding the truth we're seeking. Now, for spirits and for yourselves, the key with the truth about spirit interaction is so important for you. This issue is important for you because you are easily influenced by the things you want to avoid. You think about that for a moment. What I often liken it to is like, imagine this is you, right? Not too proportional or anything like that, just like most of my stick figures. And everything that is a problem for you that you're avoiding just becomes like another bar in a cage, right? And eventually, you avoid enough of it, you're just going to feel completely trapped, right? Every emotion that you have that you avoid, another person can manipulate. The time when you are the most powerful as a person is the time when no one can influence you negatively anymore. Now, how does that happen? That only happens by me releasing my emotion inside of me that causes me to allow manipulation. Now, let's look at some, like, one of my emotions was, when I was young, it seemed that life was so wonderful. Wasn't like that. When I was young, what happened was that my mother was 16 when she gave birth to me. Like, she was barely growing up herself, right? And so she had a child. She didn't know really how to love or anything like that. Anyway, so I grew up with no affection from a woman, pretty much. No idea what affection from a woman was like. And all of those kind of things. Now, inside of me, that created a lot of emotional hurt. Right? So I had all this emotional hurt with respect to women. And then also, any woman that was around who was angry, I would automatically do what she wanted to make her not angry with me anymore. Because to me, the absence of anger was love. Now, for many of you, you feel the same way, right? You prevent other people from being angry with you. That's great. But in reality, all it means is that I've got even bars that I'm now encaged with. So any woman who was angry with me, all they had to do was get angry with me, and I would automatically do what they wanted in order to have the equilibrium re-established so that I could feel like they didn't hate me. Right? So I grow up with that emotion. Now, how easily manipulated am I? I'm pretty easily manipulated, aren't I? All a woman needs to work out is if I'm angry with him, he'll do whatever I want. Isn't it? And I'm going to do whatever they want until I release this emotion of the fear of their anger. Why am I afraid of their anger? Because I don't want to feel the deep sadness that I feel. Does that make sense? About when they're angry with me, how I feel inside of myself and all of that stuff. So while I'm in this state of holding on to this emotion of being afraid of a woman's anger, I am like in a prison constructed of my own making, really, in the end. But any woman then can put me in that prison. Am I free? Am I in a loving relationship with any woman? Because what am I doing? I'm just afraid. Now, the women I feel the best about would be the women who had the least anger projections at me, right? And the women I feel the worst about would be the women who had the most anger projections at me in that state. And I'd be totally controlled. How do I release that control? How do I become free? I have to feel the emotion of grief about a woman's anger and what it feels like inside of myself when they're angry. Feel and release all that emotion, and how bad I feel about myself when somebody's angry with me. Release that. Now I can let people be angry with me and it has no difference whatsoever in my action. Is that freedom now? That's much more freer, isn't it? So, can you see how our emotions construct our own prison? Now, in that state, all sorts of people connected to me. I had people on earth, women on earth who were angry with me. So there's a few of them. So let's draw them. These women on earth project anger at me to control me, right? And then I have some male spirits in the spirit world attracted to me because they think that I'm being picked on by women and I'm just a weakling around women. So they connect to me and they want to try and give me backbone, you know, give him some, you know, make him be a man, you know. And so they project on me every time, you know, you stupid idiot, you're listening to a woman again, you know, all that stuff they're projecting at me. Can you see what's happening? I'm now attracting all of these things that if I released my emotional condition, they wouldn't happen. But because I'm not releasing my emotional condition, I get that projection, this projection, and then I also get some spirits from the spirit world who are women. And they think, oh, if I get angry with him, he'll do what we want too, right? So they're there projecting at me as well. And what are you feeling at this time? You're feeling like attacked by all and sundry, right? And feeling totally controlled. And all that's really controlling me in that entire scenario is my lack of desire to feel my own grief about a woman's anger. Can you see that? And that's my law of attraction. All that's my law of attraction. So these spirits think they're doing me some good, you know, giving me some male backbone. These spirits think, oh, he's a nice man, he'll do anything we want. And these people here on earth think the same thing, right? And all that's happening is my life is being controlled by these circumstances and situations because I don't want to release the emotion, the grieving emotion, which will heal all of that. So, this group of spirits here, you could say, are empathetic or sympathetic to my plight, aren't they? They're a group of male spirits who have obviously been harmed by women in their own life, right? And they think they, you know, they've got to give me some backbone. You can't put up with women treating you like this way, and they're projecting that at me, right? And by the way, this was actually happening to me. I had them connected to me for most of my life, these male spirits, right? So they're there projecting at me, you know, have some backbone, you know, don't put up with this. And in one week, what happened one time is I did this seminar. And what I did was I said, all right, this seminar is going to be a day seminar where we help people deal with emotions. There was 80 people who enrolled in the seminar, 45 of them are women, and out of the 45 of women, 35 of them got angry with me. That's a pretty good law of attraction, right? Isn't it? Like, to help me work through some emotions. All right, so they were critical of me, or what you would call judgmental of a person. So there's different types of spirits who, like in this case, who are judgmental, right? And they want something from me. So these type of spirits are sort of empathetic, in quotation marks, because really it's not really empathy, but empathetic in the sense that they have very, very similar emotions and beliefs to what I have, and so they connect to me. These spirits are more like, no, hang a sec, this person's going to be able to give me something, so they're wanting things from me, right? And they're judgmental and critical of me and so forth. They're not what you would call malevolent in that, you know, they really just want to like punish me and pummel me into the ground, but they do want to demand things from me. So that's another group of spirits. And then you could even have under these circumstances a third group of spirits who just hate your guts, right? Who are full of malicious desire to harm you. And these are all the different types of spirits that connect to you. And all right, the ones who hate my guts, they look at me in this situation and they say, gee, he's got a problem with women, hasn't he? How can we make that worse for him as much as we can? If you were a spirit in the spirit world, what would you do? Like, if you're man or woman, what was that? Exactly, yeah. Put him in a seminar with 35 women who don't like him, yeah. But so what they did is they actually gathered large groups of spirits just to project at me that I was useless as a male. Right? And so there's this huge amount of spirits projecting, you're useless as a male, so I'm going into these real self-punishing emotions, boy, I'm just useless, right? Right, because I'm getting influenced by those spirits, then I've got these spirits who are wanting something from me, so I try to give something to them. And then I've got these spirits who are empathetic and want me to have some backbone. How confusing is life getting now? Really, right, difficult. Now this was actually happening to me. Like, exactly like this. exactly like I'm describing. Now, what stops it? Me dealing with my fear and therefore underlying grief about a woman who's angry with me. That stops it. Right? And so as I release that and then deal with some underlying emotions from that, eventually it passes. Mary, you want to say? Is there a mic there?
I wanted to talk about some spirit influence that's a little more insidious, perhaps on the part of the women who were angry with you.
Yep.
A lot of them weren't aware that they were angry. A lot of them were carrying a lot of deep wounds from their childhood about the way their fathers or uncles or brothers treated them.
Yep.
And so they were carrying a lot of hurt about men. And they felt that men should look after them.
Yes.
So they were attracting a lot of female spirits who had a similar life and felt that we've had it really hard as women, so men should look after us. And if a man doesn't look after us, it's okay to get a bit bossy about it.
Yeah, and get angry with him.
So the reason I bring it up is that many of us have spirits around us that are empathetic to us and our emotions, and we feel that they're really helpful, especially people who are mediums. There's this great spirit, they're telling me I'm doing the right thing, they're giving me lots of warm feelings,
yeah.
And they understand what I've been through.
Yeah.
And a lot of that spirit influence is much harder to... That's actually a very negative spirit influence because it's helping us avoid our causal emotion. But we can often think that it's really positive.
Yeah, we think it's great because they, you know, helping us to really avoid our emotion in a lot of ways. You understand what Mary was saying there? So a lot of times these people on earth have spirits associated with them as well who think, you know, oh, they're looking for an AJ type of fellow with that emotional injury. Does that make sense? I'm looking for an AJ type of fellow. If I can find an AJ type of fellow who has this emotional injury with women, then he's going to look after this girl, right? And consequently, do you think AJ spent a lot of his life looking after women? Yes, of course, right? Because of this emotional injury, right? And so once I start working through this injury, a lot of these barriers and also a lot of the attachments stop. So once I work through the injury where I no longer feel the need to be governed by a woman's anger, all of a sudden they give up projecting anger at me, because what's the point? They don't get anything out of it and it has no effect on me. These guys are happy now because basically this guy's standing up for himself and he knows what he's doing now. So they clear off and feel their sadness, which is what's connecting them to me. These women here, they haven't got any effect on me anymore. How can they affect me? You know, as soon as they try to put me in a, get angry with me, I just say, sorry, you're angry with me now. When you're ready to stop being angry with me, I will visit you again. Now, some of them, that was 3 years ago. I haven't seen them since, right? Because I still love them, but I'm not going to allow them to get angry with me anymore. Does that make sense? So they no longer have an effect on my life either. And then this one's all coming to me because of how bad I felt about myself. But now that I've dealt with a lot of these emotions, I feel actually a bit better about myself. Can you see? Because I'm no longer getting easily manipulated, controlled and all those things. So now they can't project hate at me so much and have an effect on me. So how's my prison now? Can you see that I've got a lot more freedom? And I don't worry about all those things anymore, don't even feel too much about them anymore. Oh yeah, there's another angry woman. Okay, no, it doesn't have an effect anymore. She can't manipulate me anymore. Another woman who wants me to do things for her, I will do things for her if I feel like doing things for her. That's the only time it's going to happen. And they can't easily manipulate me anymore either. Can you see what happens? There's a lot more freedom then in that state, isn't there? Now, every spirit is attracted to you to actually heighten the emotion that causes the attraction in order for you to get to the underlying causal emotion. So, if I feel really bad about myself, my law of attraction is going to attract people who treat me bad to heighten that emotion inside of me until I connect with it. Does that make sense to you? It's really quite simple. I will be, while I feel bad about myself, other people will treat me badly, because they know they can and get away with it, that will actually heighten my feeling of how I feel about myself until a point where I have a breakthrough, where I actually grieve the causal emotional reason why I have that feeling. When I release that, all the attractions will instantly change after that point. Right? Now, what happens in practice a lot of times is I grieve it a bit, so a bit of attraction changes, I grieve it a bit more changes, I grieve it a bit more changes, and that happens over a period of, say, some months or maybe even a year or two. But you do have the capacity, and all the spirits who are with us today have the capacity to release emotion a lot faster than that if we allow ourselves to fully get into what the real reasons are about it. But most of the time, we are addicted to the support we get from other people and the spirit world. Now, let's look at an addiction in operation. Here's an addiction. Here's a male on earth. Here's a female on earth. And this male on earth, say, grew up with hardly any affection from his mother. So what's going to be his addiction with women? He wants affection, doesn't he? He wants affection from women. Right? So he's not got affection from his mother, so he will want affection. That's his addiction. So he will project at every woman, give me affection, give me affection, give me affection. If you give me affection, I can be a man. If you don't give me affection, I can't. Because that's the emotional injury in this case. He wants affection. Now, what kind of woman is going to enter the relationship with this man? Well, he wants affection. What's going to be a harmonious relationship with this man? It has to be a woman who gives him affection, right? But, it all comes at a price, right? With price tag. What's the price tag? Well, it might be, I'll give you affection as long as you let me control most of your life. That might be the price tag. Does that make sense? Right, so that's the price tag. I'll give you affection as long as I can control what goes on. Now let's take it a bit differently. Let's imagine for a moment he never got any sexual validation or affection. So now he wants sex as an expression of affection, right? That gets projected out. What's he going to get? An oversexed woman. I could make a lot of comments about that, but I will leave them all behind. All right, so he'll get a woman who gives him sexual interaction, but there'll be something else going on, you see. You see, he's got a price tag attached to his desire, hasn't he? What he is asking for has a price attached. So really what he's asking for is to be loved, but he doesn't. Like, he thinks sex and love is going to be the same thing. And so when he gets sex, then he thinks he's being loved. And if he doesn't get sex, he doesn't feel he's being loved. How many men are like that? They don't get sex, and they say they're not loved anymore. Like, there's a lot of men like that, right? So there's a lot of women, too, who use sex as a bartering tool to control the relationship. Why do they do that? If they love somebody, they wouldn't do that, would they? Because there's issues of security and safety and other issues that she has. So can you see how often there's an addiction set up? And in the spirit world, what an addiction looks like is an energetic tentacle. It's like an emotion that travels through space and time that you can actually see. It has a colour as well. It has colour. And so you imagine me, I'm walking around with all these emotional injuries and I've got all these tentacles coming off me. If you can think of it like that. So you'd be this great big octopus, right? Walking around, all these tentacles come, and it's like, looking for satisfaction. This is what an addiction is, right? We're looking for satisfaction. It's like a great big suction cap. And then all of a sudden, we find somebody who's exactly the right match for this particular addiction to be satisfied. Right? And the obviously, most of the time, the opposite addiction is also occurring in the other person, right? So now we've got a very strong bond with that person. Now, for many of us, that bond feels like, oh, that's love. Is it love? Can't get my words right. It's a suction tentacle, that's what it is. It's not love, right? Because what's happening is that we've got this big addiction being projected out there to be satisfied. And addictions come from our unhealed emotional state. Now, those addictions can be satisfied by either a person on earth or a spirit. A spirit will feel the addiction as much as a person on earth will. Right? So let's say I'm now the lady and I have a really deep desire for a man to think I'm special. And this might come from the fact that my dad never treated me very specially at all. Right? So I have this addiction. A man must treat me special. A man must treat me special. Now, on earth, I'll have some men line up who are willing to treat me special. And those men I like. I think they're beautiful. Right? Any man that just can take me or leave me? No, don't like them, right? It has to be a man who treats me as special. And oftentimes when we have an addiction, we don't even care where we get the addiction satisfied from. It doesn't matter whether they're our husband, you know, a guy down the street, you know, next door neighbour, the guy at the deli. Doesn't really matter to us as long as the addiction is satisfied, right? And so this addiction, you can think of these tentacles going out and we're just waiting for satisfaction. Now, can you see an addiction like that has a lot of danger attached to it sexually? In the sense that a lot of the men are going to start projecting at me sexually and I think, oh, that's wonderful. They think I'm, you know, hot stuff. You know, that's really good. But there's just the addiction getting satisfied within myself that has created that attraction. Now, all addictions create attractions in the spirit world. I'm going to be surrounded by men projecting at me sexually in the spirit world. From the spirit world. They even may set up people in my sexual liaisons with people on earth in order to satisfy this addiction. Right? They may even go that far. Now, it all begins, and this is where it's important to remember with all of this stuff with spirit, it all begins inside yourself, inside your soul. Right? That's where it all begins. So what needs to be healed is what is inside of me. That's what needs to be healed. When I heal that, what's going to happen? These addictions won't be projected out, therefore the attractions cannot occur. And you think, if I heal this issue inside of me, whatever this issue is, any person who projects something at me, I will automatically feel what it is they are projecting and I'll know how to act. Can you see that? Like, if I heal everything inside of me and a guy comes along and he has a huge sexual projection at me, right? Because I'm pretty hot stuff, right? So he has a huge sexual projection at me, like. Now, if I've healed all of my stuff inside of me, I won't get angry with him. I won't respond to him. I won't feel attracted to him. I won't be disgusted with him. I won't even react any way at all. Can you see that? Because whatever he's projecting at me has no more effect on me at all. It's like it just passes through me without any other response. It doesn't have any effect on me at all. And can you see that if a man felt that I was in that place, he might not even project that at me because he would know that it's wholly useless to do so. Can you see that? What's the point in giving a sexual projection to a woman who doesn't need one? No, that's not true. The comment was so that poor woman would never get sex again. No, that's not true. She will only get sex from the person she desires it from. And that's a big difference. Right? If she's in that state, she won't enter into addictive transactions regarding sex anymore. Right? You know, most of our transactions emotionally here on earth are addictive in some way. When we heal them, they stop becoming addictive and they now become based on love. And this is what we need to do. We need to, people on earth, us, need to focus on firstly dealing with our emotional stuff. When we deal with our emotional stuff, spirits can no longer connect with you in that way. They can no longer harm you in any way. They can no longer project stuff at you that you feel is negative and in any way. You don't need to surround yourself anymore with a ball of light in order to be protected, right? Because your emotional condition is such that you are connected with God, you are connected with yourself, and there is no projections coming out of you that need fulfillment because you're owning all of your own emotions. Now, the majority of us are not in that state. And that's why we have the spirit attractions come, and that's why these spirit influences occur. Does that make sense? No. See, it's got nothing to do with AJ. You've got to get this out of your mind. It's got everything to do with your connection with God. Right? And you receiving divine love and focusing on truth. All I can do is teach you principles. I can't cause you to do that. Well, teaching principles. Well, that may be true, but at the end of the day, it's pointless focusing on me or Mary or anybody else who's teaching you truth. What we need to do is connect with God and the emotions surrounding our condition. That's what we need to do. Right? When we do that, we can heal everything, and then you can teach others how to do that, like how to heal everything within yourself. So when it comes to spirit attractions, there is no need to be frightened of them. There is no need to be concerned about how bad they are or how they're going to affect you, because you know that you have total control over every one of these attractions. And what's the control? The control is you feeling your causal emotion for the attraction. That's the control you have. That is totally up to you. Nobody else can control that for you. Nobody else can prevent you from even doing it. Now, a lot of the times, the only way they can influence is if we have a desire to avoid the truth inside of ourselves. Now, when we have a desire to avoid the truth inside of ourselves, what happens? Now there's an emotional blockage to seeing the truth about ourselves in some area emotionally. Now any person who sees that within us has the ability to manipulate that. That's what happens. So what are we going to need if we're really going to deal with our spirit attractions? These are the things we're going to need. First thing is humility. Remember what humility is? It's the passionate desire to experience and release all of your emotions, whether they're painful or pleasurable. It's the passionate desire to see yourself as God sees you. Right? When we have that humility, we can start to feel our emotions. Once we start feeling our emotions, spirits have far less control over our emotions. What else do we need? We need truth. And I'm not talking about my truth or yours, actually. What we need is divine truth. What we need to know is what God feels about a certain thing. And we don't need to know it, we need to feel it. So this is something we need to focus on. And then, of course, the other thing we need is a longing for God's love, divine love. Because if we have a longing for divine love, as that divine love enters us, it opens us up emotionally to all of our unhealed emotional state. And as that occurs, we now are in the position where this person that we are begins healing emotionally. But as you receive divine love, as you pray and long for divine love, you'll notice that there will often be an emotional experience associated, right? And that's because as divine love enters us, it confronts the emotional truth that's inside of us and helps us to release that. Now with those things, every spirit here needs it and every person on earth needs it. And when we deal with that, what will happen with the law of attraction with spirits is it will change things immensely. We will start seeing a spirit just the same way as we see anyone else. So as we're looking at each other right now, this is exactly the same way as we'll see spirits. We won't be afraid of, oh, there's that monster looking spirit, you know. Oh yeah, there's a thousand spirits projecting that image. Oh yeah, boy, you guys are really sad, aren't you? You know, it's so sad that it takes a thousand of you to make something like that up. Like, that's a really sad thing. You'd feel, wouldn't you start feeling a feeling of love and concern for them? And you'd start feeling like you want to talk to them about that, you know. And then another spirit comes along and he's really overbearing with you, and he's a man and you're a woman and he's really trying to harm you and push you around. And instead of getting yelling and screaming at him and telling him to F off or whatever we want to do, we feel instead, because we've released the emotion, we feel this feeling of, wow, you know, you're so angry and you've got so much sadness with women, you know. What can we do about that? You know, do you want to talk about that? And you can see in all of our interactions with spirits will change quite a lot, right? Now, when our interactions with spirits change, those spirits will no longer want to influence people on earth down the same line that they have been going down, right? How many times have you seen a person who's just an average person have a few drinks and before you know it, they're off their head with anger? How many times do you see that? What happened there? If there wasn't any spirits hanging around the person, he could get drunk to oblivion and no spirit would connect to him and he still wouldn't get angry if he didn't have anger within himself. There are just so many things caused by this spirit interaction at the moment due to beliefs of untruth that cause us to do all sorts of things that wouldn't happen at all if we dealt with our emotional cause within ourselves. If spirits dealt with theirs and I dealt with mine, how can I influence them and how can they influence me? And that's the beauty of understanding the law of attraction and how it works between spirits and yourself. Now what we're going to do tomorrow though is we're going to look more at the sort of the individual nitty-gritties of the law of attraction and how it affects diseases and illnesses and all of those kind of things in people, right the way through from childhood illnesses through to emotional and mental illnesses and into physical diseases and so forth. And we'll look at the relationship between what's going on earth in the emotional state and what's going on in the spirit world in terms of the attraction, so that you can see what's actually happening completely. But bear in mind that you have the power to change everything in your life just by working on your own emotional condition. So you do not need to be worried or concerned or scared or afraid about how a spirit is treating you at any one point in time, because it's all able to be controlled by your own emotional condition. It's a matter of dealing with your emotional condition and your belief systems. And when you deal with those belief systems and emotional conditions that are disharmonious with love, that are causing you pain, all of these other things will automatically change. Yeah? So that's what will be our discussion tomorrow. And tomorrow is going to be in a different venue. How many of us are here at the moment? There's quite a few, isn't there? There's about 50. Will we all fit, do you think, in the library? 50 will? So tomorrow's event's going to be at the Gordon White Library? North Mackay? Behind Mount Pleasant Shopping Complex, because we couldn't get this venue for tomorrow. Alright? So if any of you want to come tomorrow, that's where we'll be. And thank you guys for your time today.